Blog
Real sports guys, a few technical difficulties there with my boy. Don't know what's going on. We're going to keep it rolling. Real sports guys, RSG, Renegade Radio, where real guys talk real sports. I'm your host, Marcus the Game Changer, one-third of the illustrious three-man booth. I have my man D. Wills with me. D. Wills, how are the people?
Blame the technical difficulties on me because I wanted that cameo. Word up. Hey,
I had it all queued up, man. I don't know what the deal is. Something wrong with the board. We'll get that worked out. We'll get that figured out. You know, Game Changer going to get that worked out.
But we're going to find out today why they call you the Game Changer.
Exactly.
What people are going to say, you're not going to find stuff that you're going to hear tonight. Tonight is why. See, when you watch the regular sports talk shows, we're texting back and forth about it. We're like a week ahead of everybody. And you're going to find out why we foreshadow that you hear it on your regular talk shows, but you hear it first here.
Exactly. This is the resistance, all right? This is where you get everything that you don't get from the national, from your national ESPN, Fox Sports radio hosts. This ain't that. We also give you a little something different than your local guys. We kind of take it big, but then we can go micro, we can go macro on you. And that's how we do with the real sports guys. Now, we got one more member of the illustrious three-man booth, and that is Phil T. Sports PhD. Break it down, brother.
Hey, man, I got a good show. Had it lined up for the listeners. Like I was telling you guys a few minutes ago, I just got out the locker room, got my ankles taped up, you know, out here doing suicides on the court, getting loosened up, man. Want to thank RJ Page for coming and really just predicting what was going to happen in the World Series. And also we got Eric Hamilton coming on a little bit later to make sure your fantasy game up.
Yes, sir. And shout out to RJ Page, man. I'm going to have to hit that brother with some lotto numbers because he was spot on.
That's yeah, right. He was on fire.
So we got a banging show for you lined up like we always do about this time, 8:30 to 10:30 Central Time. We're going to hold you down for the next 2 hours. We're going to get it rolling. We're going to get into what we like to call around these parts, the funky editorial, and we're going to see if this boy want to act right.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say.
Yeah.
Everybody want to get
all right. Now, I don't know if that was big for y'all. Okay, it's still going. I don't know what's up. Technical difficulties all around. Fellas, did y'all hear that? Or did it come in and out for you guys, too?
I heard it, then it cut out. So
okay, I just want to make sure it just wasn't me and my connection. And okay, so, we may not have all the bells and whistles that we usually have, but, hey, man, we keep it raw and rugged around here, so we're just going to keep it rolling. We're going to keep doing what we do. Nothing's going to slow us down. All right? So we got the Funky Editorial. This week's edition of the Funky Editorial, we're going to get into each of us considers ourselves somewhat of a burgeoning fantasy football expert. All right? We all play. We all play hard. We all got some trophies. We all got some rings. We all got titles and banners hanging up around our cribs and in our man caves and our dens at our respective domiciles. That's home for those of you who aren't as, gifted with vocabulary like I am. No, I'm just messing with you. I'm just messing with the listeners out there. So we're going to get into kind of give you guys an update on how our fantasy teams are doing, how things are going with our fantasy teams right now. So I'll start out. Right now I am in 4 leagues, right? So I'm in 4 fantasy football leagues. In one, I'm undefeated because I get it in like that. In one league, I'm sitting in fourth place at 5-3. Another league, I'm sitting in sixth, seventh place at 4-4. And then another league, I'm 3-5. So overall, I'm not in all the leagues. I'm within a game or two of first place. So I'm holding it down. I'm hanging in there. The goal is to make the playoffs with all my rosters. So far this year, my teams are doing pretty well. I'm going to let the guys kind of check in and give you an update on how their fantasy teams are doing. I'll start with my man, PhD.
You're in with the mess.
Hey, you said it. I didn't.
Got a little background on you.
So I'm in two leagues, which for me is a big step. Because the last two or three years, I was just a one-league type of guy. Now, previous to that, my first 4 or 5 years in fantasy football, I was a guy that was in 3 or 4 leagues. I was a negligent owner. I only paid attention to one or two. So a couple of years ago, I just, you know, had to check into rehab and just, you know, toned it down to one league. So this year I'm back to two. So in one league, I'm 5-2, I believe. 6-2. And then in the other league, I am, I think I'm like in third or fourth place, right around 500 or so, maybe fifth place, but I'm in the playoff hunt. So that's how I'm rolling so far.
All right. And now D. Wills, how's it going, brother?
I am technically this year the Peyton Manning of fantasy football. This has been my craziest year, and I need to see the doctor, Phil. See, I need to see the doctor that you went to see. I need to go to rehab big time because I decided I was going to do two, and I went. This has been the year I went against everything. I did three leagues, and the crazy thing about it is the third league I decided to do is the one that I'm probably doing the best. So one league, I'm sitting at 2-6. We're not even going to talk about that league. At all. In another league, I am sitting, I actually moved up to, I think it's the league that I decided that I was going to join. I moved up to sixth place. So I'm about one game out of the playoffs, which is, I'm sitting at 4-4. And then in the league that, I think this is the one that, I don't know if the, not the one that the game changers in.
Yeah, that's what I'm undefeated in.
Yeah, that's what that you're undefeated. Already in that league, I'm not doing well in it, but the sixth place will get you in the playoffs, and I'm only one game out of the playoffs. So I don't know how that's all going to fold out, but Game Changer's killing it in that league. And then in another league, I'm sitting at 2-6. I've never had a record like this. All I can do is just hold it down to I went against my principles. My principles in the draft. Draft, regardless of position, get the best player available. And I went against it, and it's cost me this year. But I'm not done. I'm guaranteed that I'm going to make the playoffs in 2 or 3 leagues. You said it right here. I've said it right here.
Right.
Okay, we got it on tape, brother. It's 2011. It's all on tape.
Right. Dina went Rex Ryan with it.
I'm Rex Ryan, though.
You want to go Rob? Didn't end so well for him.
I'm not going to go Rob, Brian. I'm going Rex. Woo! I'm excited.
Well, you can't explain it. And let's get into that a little bit. We all go into drafts with a certain kind of strategy. And I think, you know, D. Wills and I have had conversations about his team's performance in this particular league. And we had conversations at the draft about his particular team. And because I know D. Wills. D. Wills is a mentor of mine. And I've picked up a lot of helpful nuggets of knowledge from D. Wills. And at the draft this year, I turned to you and I said, you kind of got a different team than you usually pick. Because that's the thing. In most of my leagues, I've been in leagues with these people for probably at least 3 years. So you kind of get to know the people that you're in the leagues with. You get to know their drafting habits and kind of their philosophies on how they do things. You know certain cats up in Wisconsin. We're in the Wisconsin area, northern Illinois area. You know cats that are going to go for their Bears and they're going to go for their Packers. And you know who those guys are who really don't care. They just want to have guys on their team because it's hard for them to separate that. And me, I don't give a damn. I don't care if you're on my favorite team or my least favorite team. If you're going to get me that money, you can have a roster spot. All right? You might get that call on draft day. I don't care who you play for. All right, I told you, I'm a kid. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, been living in Wisconsin since I was 13 years old. And because of that, I'm conflicted. I root for the Packers. I root for the Bears. You ain't supposed to be like that, though. But I work it out. I work it out in my head. You know what I'm saying? And I'm the same way with fantasy football. But you get to know the guys who are in your league with you. And you get to know their habits and players that they like, players that they don't like. And you kind of develop this draft strategy with that information kind of tucked away. You don't want to let that influence you too much. So I'm watching D. Wills do his thing, and I'm just like, this brother ain't doing what he usually do. He's kind of throwing me for a loop here. Because I think you was a couple picks behind me, so it wasn't really that much on my mind, because it's like, well, he's not affecting my strategy so much, because, you know, you worry about those cats who are bracketing you, but you wasn't even nowhere near me as far as the order of the draft. So why don't you break down to people what your usual draft strategy is and what you did this year?
I usually go with the best player available. I don't get caught up in, I need to get a quarterback here because everybody's chasing. I normally don't chase what everybody else chases. I usually try to get sound quarterbacks. And I look at this a lot like, you know, like balancing your stock portfolio. You know, I want to get people who are, usually I get people who are pretty sound. And this year, I went with the home run strike. And this is what you asked me. You said, this is not normally a team. You're going for a guy. You're going for some. You got some guys on your team who, if they on, they're going to go off. If they not, they're going to kill you. I usually stay away. Like, everybody used to get T.O. Everybody used to get Moss. I used to stay away from them. Because on one game, they'll hit you for 40. On another game, they might get 3. And so I've gone away from that strategy this year.
Yeah. And I think that you had guys like, you picked up guys like DeSean Jackson. Great player, but again, he's a home run hitter. He's not a grinder. And usually I notice that you go for grinders. Guy, you have a team full of grinders, and you have a couple of home run hitters who can get you over the hump on those weeks when you need them to. But you took flyers on guys like Reggie Bush and DeSean Jackson and, you know, our boy Phillip Rivers. But you took cats like that who are good players, but they're also, I think the term I use is feast or famine. They're feast or famine guys. There's going to be, I told you, there's going to be some weeks where your team is damn near unbeatable, and there's going to be some weeks where you struggle to score 50 points. And that's basically how your season is gone, you know. And you stay away from your strategy. Usually you're a meat and potatoes kind of guy with your team. And that's kind of what I did in that particular league. Is last year I did what you did. I got caught up in what everybody was doing around me, and I started to try to adjust my strategy. You know, in this league, a lot of guys like to grab quarterbacks real early, at least for the last couple of years. Guys have been grabbing quarterbacks real early. And I think D. Will kind of got caught up in that this year. I got caught up in it last year and had a horrible year.
Yeah. And when it was happening, I thought, as it was happening, I was thinking, damn, game changer went the same thing last year. And I remember looking at your team, I was like, how is he not winning? Because I never known you not to be in the thick of things. Like, what you're doing this year is normally what you do. You normally are in the thick of things. And you did the same thing I did this year. I learned my lesson. You know, you ain't got to tell me, you know what I'm going to do next year. I'm going back to the old grind it out.
You see, I'm going back to the meat and potatoes, man.
I'm going back to the meat and potatoes. I ain't getting caught up with none of that flash. And I'm paying. And now, it's funny, when you down, you get all kinds of crazy trades. Bulldog, our favorite online person, sending me some crazy trades. And so he tried, you know, they get you, they down, but they don't realize you only one game out of the playoffs. See, I'm not going to panic. You know, and the other thing I had was Foster. I tried to go on Foster, and Foster got hurt early on, and he wasn't playing early on, and now he's coming back. But you're right. I had too many cats who don't bring it every day. Too many cats who love them some them, and that's what I got. Too many guys. I don't get too many guys who in the newspaper. But all the guys I got now, when I heard all my guys were doing quotes talking about their team, if I look at my roster, I'm like, they're on my team. I'm like, I'm in trouble. You know, Jackson, one of them. You know, talking about his team like he ain't getting no throws today. You know, so I'm not going to do that again. I'm taking on chin this year. That's what all you folks out there, you can learn. You can always bounce back. You can go to that. You can go to that 7-step, 12-step, 9-step, 17-step program, and you can be back next year.
PhD, enlighten us on some things that you look for when you're going into a draft.
You know, honestly, man, I'm kind of like the Jets this year. I'm like the Eagles. Every year I struggle with finding my identity. You know, I have a problem. Like, I don't have a go-to philosophy, okay? And that probably explains why I'm so inconsistent, okay? So like Devon said, I've been through the 12-step program. I can easily say, yes, I'm an addict. Yes, I have a fantasy football problem in terms of not having a philosophy. This year, I guess we'll get into that a little bit later, but I don't have much to offer, man. I don't have a philosophy. I kind of go with what's clever at the time. Sometimes it works out well, other times it doesn't.
Excellent. I feel you on that. And you kind of have to have a percentage of that in you where you go off of your draft board at times because it makes sense. I usually have a pretty solid sound philosophy that I stick to. And last year I went away from it. I usually wait on quarterbacks, period. I usually wait on my quarterback, get in with my first 5 picks. I want a combination of 2 running backs and 3 receivers. And in some way, shape, or form, whether when I take those guys depends on who's available, but that's what I want to walk away with because that's usually your starting, you know, in a lot of leagues, that's usually going to cover your starter, the majority of your starters. Then I start to look at, you know, adding depth, and then around the 8th round, I start looking at those mid-level quarterbacks and trying to ID those guys who are going to be solid. They don't have to be your Aaron Rodgers, your Drew Brees, Tom Brady, you know, Mike Vick, Cam Newton, you know, those kind of guys. They don't have to produce at that level. But you want them to be solid. Yeah, I included Cam in that group because the boy has been doing his thing, which is a surprise. And then at the end, I kind of look for flyers, guys who got, you know, boom or bust kind of guys who can have a huge year and make you look real smart. Or, you know, if they don't do anything, you drop them and nobody cares. And that's usually how I go into a draft. I have guys that I target, that I try and get across the board. And then I have some sleepers that I target. Like in the league, I'm 8-0. You know, and me and Ray kind of got into it on the message board because I was clowning because I'm undefeated. And this is the league where when you go undefeated, you need to clown, okay? You just need to. It's a necessity, all right? So, you know, I'm clowning, doing my thing, or whatever. And me and Ray, you know, we got into it. We going back and forth because he's like, the only reason you're winning is because you got lucky and drafted Cam Newton with your last pick. And my point was, give a man credit for taking a rookie quarterback with his last pick. Who takes a rookie quarterback at all unless you think you got something? I didn't think he was going to ball like this, but I definitely thought he was serviceable. I thought he was rosterable. You know, I thought he was worth a spot, you know. And Cam Newton is one of those guys for me who has made my fantasy football season this year because I took a flyer on him in a couple of leagues, and it's really worked out. You know, the other guy I got was Cutler. I got Cutler consistently in every league because I thought, you know, more time in Mark's system was going to help him. It didn't really work out. But Cam has been a saving grace. I got depth at other positions. I got a quarterback who's in the 13th, 14th, 15th round of a couple of drafts who's playing like a first or second round quarterback. So, you know, things are looking rosy for the game changer. Who are some guys out there who have really impacted you guys' fantasy seasons, your fantasy fortunes this year, both negatively and positively? Arian Foster, you know, you mentioned Arian Foster, D. Wills, and he's a guy who hurt me in one league because I took him with my first pick, And that particular team that he's on has gotten off to a slow start, but now we're starting to pick up steam. I think that was the case for your squad as well. So why don't you guys, I'm gonna throw it to PhD first. Why don't you guys give us some guys who are killing it for you and some guys who are just killing you?
Well, for me, the guys that are killing me is Peyton Manning. And, you know, perhaps I just did this to myself. I should have known better. But in one league, the league that Eric's in, that'll be coming on shortly, we can start two quarterbacks, one quarterback, and then we got a flex position where you can play any skilled guy, including a quarterback. So my theory was to go in. I took Arian Foster first, and then second and third rounds, I wanted to get solid quarterbacks. And so, you know, I just thought Peyton Manning, hey, it's Peyton Manning. He's going to be playing. Well, he didn't, and that was my second round pick. We're in an IDP league, so I went with Eric Berry, who was one of the top IDP DBs last year. I mean, he got me consistently 15 to 20 points last year. He tore his ACL in the first quarter. So those are the guys that really, really hurt me. My stud so far is I picked up Welker in the fourth round. He's been a top five, top 10 guy this year, not just receivers, but for all guys. And then I picked up AJ Green in the 12th round. And he's been a top 10 receiver. And as Dalton gets better, he's getting better. So those are probably my two studs and my two duds.
Excellent. D-Wills, weigh in, please.
Well, you in the situation I'm in, I probably got a long list of duds. But I think the person who's consistently killing me, even though we debated last year, and you and I mean, last week, and you and game today, you and I have been going back and forth on text, and I still think long run he's a good quarterback. He just hasn't done it. Philip Rivers has killed me because I took him in.
Yes.
So I got to say that. So that's I'm just gonna.
I love being right.
I mean, he's killed me. He's killed me in fantasy, and I've stayed. He's a guy I've stayed away from. Even though I think he's a good quarterback, I've just never taken him. And this year, I decided I was going to go after him because I felt like he could have a good year. He's killed me in some games.
I want winners.
And that's it.
Reggie Bush, that catch that fumble snap in the fourth quarter.
Reggie Bush killed me because I thought they were going to play him just like they just played him recently. He had a good game. He didn't get a touchdown, but they were going to get him the touches. And then when I started watching how Miami used him, they were running him up the middle. That's not where you run Reggie Bush. Get him out in space, let him play, and they didn't. And I tried to take him because I had a couple of leagues where I had flex, and I wanted to be able to position him that way, and he killed me. But the person's got to save me a little bit lately. And he hasn't had great games, but he's just been – I can see him getting more touches, getting used to it. Is Jackie Battle for Kansas City. He started getting a little bit more touches as they feel a little bit more success because I had to find someone who could help me. And he's given me, you know, a little something here in helping me when I've had some bye game, some backs on bye. So – not a solid one, but is, you know, getting enough touches that's helped me in some games and kept things close. I've had some crazy games this year where I couldn't score anything, and Philip Rivers had like 4 points, 3 points. I didn't think that was going to happen, but he's my biggest dud.
Eli Better.
My most successful one is Cundiff for the kicker.
Hey, don't sleep on Jason Hansen from the Detroit Lions.
I'm telling you, he got me like 13 scoring points a couple games and had some big ones just saving me on a couple games. So considering what my record is, a couple games is at least got me in a playoff hunt in at least one league.
Yeah, some guys who are making a huge difference for me. I mentioned Cam Newton. Like I said, he's been a saving grace because he's taken some of my teams to that next level. Because of the way I drafted and the way I did things, getting a quarterback who's playing as well as he is that late, on top of, you know, bolstering being pretty solid at my other positions, has really helped me out a whole lot. Another guy who has really stepped in and helped me in some pinches, Darius Heyward-Bey, has actually helped out a couple of my teams when I had guys on bye. You know, some of the Bay, actually a couple Bay Area receivers, him and Michael Crabtree. And I'm hanging on to Michael Crabtree right now because it seems like he might be starting to turn that corner and become the productive player that I think most people thought he was going to be when he came out of Texas Tech. But Darius Hayward-Bey, you know, has stepped in a couple of weeks and given me some solid production. So those are a couple guys who have really helped me out. And then a mainstay on quite a few of my teams is LeSean McCoy. I'm becoming a big-time LeSean McCoy fan because the brother's holding me down. He's getting me points. He's getting me those tough points. He's getting me those, you know, get over the hump points. When I'm going into a Sunday night game and I'm down 20 and I got LeSean going, I know I got that 20 plus a couple more, you know. So he's a guy because he catches the ball. He hasn't had as many receptions as he usually gets, but he catches the ball out of the backfield. So in your PPR leagues, in my PPR leagues, he's helping me out a whole lot. And he's been running the ball really well this year. For all of the struggles that the Eagles offensive line has been having protecting Mike Vick, they've been doing a good job of opening up some running lanes for old Shady. So, you know, those are some guys that have been helping me out a whole lot this year and keeping the game-changer squads on pace and keeping us in the mix. You know, right now, but again, you got to do well as a draft, but then you also have to be flexible enough to make those timely pickups. So that's what I want to get into right now. Who have been some timely pickups for you guys? You know, we 8 weeks into the season. Who have been some guys that you either picked up and has turned things around for you or been productive members of your franchise, your organization, so to speak, or guys you just missed, whether you got up too late or, you know, your computer froze as you was hitting the drop button or whatever you were trying to do. Guys who... those waiver wire kind of players, you know, those waiver wire wonders. D. Wills, who you got? Who's been helping you out?
Well, I talked a little bit about Battle, but another person that has helped me lately, just because when you're not scoring anything, you need help everywhere. So let's start with that. But the person that's kind of helped me a little bit that I think has been good as a tight end, and I think he's going to, you know, even though his team is going to struggle, they're going to play from behind a lot, and it helped me out the last couple of weeks, is Fred Davis with Washington. He's gotten me where I need to have some other balance. I need to have some people fill in and help out. He's been good for me lately. Someone who's waking up, because he got traded a little bit, that I like, and I'm gonna put him in a category that let's revisit him in a couple weeks as he gets settled in there, is Brandon Lloyd, and that was not really a pickup, but it was kind of staying with him, you know, with all the stuff happening in Denver, you know, I thought about, damn, you know, I'm about to try to get rid of him, but I like the life that's coming in. But Jackie Battle for me has probably been the one person that I've been able to fill some holes. I had Cedric Gibson, who's been out because of the suspension, and I needed some help, and he's filled some holes for me. So those are a couple people.
Yeah, see, that's another guy you got. You got old House Shoes Benson running around messing up your roster.
He's actually done all right this year.
Nah, he has. I just like calling him House Shoes.
And I knew as soon as I said it, you gonna clown me. I knew it. And I can say this. I didn't say this though, but Brady has been like Jordan for me. Jordan in the early days. Brady was like Jordan shooting every shot. You know, in his first couple of seasons, he was like, he's going to take 45 shots. That's Brady for me, holding it together.
PhD, give me what you got, bro.
All right, so I'm gonna start with my poor moves so far. So sticking with Eric's league, I freaked out second week of the season. Arian Foster was out with a hamstring. I was like, you know what? I got to make a move. So Macklin had just gotten me like 30 or 40 points. I traded him for Ben Tate.
Oh.
Oh, man. Oh,
yeah.
Man. Maclin now is a top 10 receiver, of course. I picked up Mario Manningham, like, in the fourth or fifth round. I got unhappy with him after week five. I dropped him for nothing. Again, he had a 20-point week last week.
So, come again? I could understand that one. Because he was raggedy that first half of the season. A lot of folks probably would have dropped Mario.
Yeah. It hurts. I mean, it doesn't hurt any less, though, okay? You know, because when I had Manningham, you know, I'm watching Red Zone, and every time they throw the ball, it would go to somebody that number started with 80-something. And I'm like, oh, is that Manningham? Nope, it's Knicks. Nope, it's Cruz. So this past week, the last week or two, every time they cut into a Giants game, Manningham's making a play. So, you know, I mean, it just kind of digs in on me. So the nice pickups, okay, I'm just not going to beat myself up, okay? I'm going to have a little cake as well. I picked up Sidney Rice off of waivers in week two. And quiet as this cat, Sidney in our league is averaging about 20 points a game when Tavares Jackson is playing. And, you know, I mentioned I didn't have much of a philosophy, but I do like guys who are the clear-cut number one receivers on their team. That's why I thought A.J. Green was going to be a good pickup, because there was nobody else there, and the team seemed to make a commitment to want to get him the ball early. So, I mean, last week, Sidney, you know, we get bonuses for 40-yard-plus plays, so Sidney ended up getting me 20, 23 points. now I'm in a big dilemma. Okay, I have four quarterbacks in my roster. So my top quarterback is Matt Schaub. Okay, then I got three guys that I'm not really sure about. I've got Andy Dalton, who's been playing pretty well. But then I picked up Carson Palmer and Tim Tebow. And, yes, I played Tim Tebow last week. He got me negative 8 points.
I've been there, man.
Got me negative 8 points. But, you know, last week, ESPN, Yahoo, both had this guy in the top 7 or 8 of plays in terms of quarterbacks. And so I look today, ESPN's got him at like 8th or 9th this week again. And so I'm sitting there, you know, I was going back and forth, you know, up to the time I had to submit my rosters, like La Russa, you know, had to go to the umpire to submit my lineup cards. I was going back and forth between Dalton and Tebow. So Dalton got me 15 points last week. Tebow got me a negative 8. That was a swing of 23 points that I could have used. I still would have lost, but it would have made me feel a whole lot better. So that's my dilemma. You know, I'm hoping Tebow and Palmer have decent weeks this next week so I can make a move to get another running back, because I'm really weak at running back. Outside of Arian Foster, I have no other solid running back.
Ooh. Yeah, man. You got an interesting story there, brother.
That's right.
But I will agree with you. I love your point about Sidney Rice, because you know you never really thought those words would come out of your mouth. You know, X receiver is great when Tavares Jackson is playing.
Right.
So, I don't think you ever envisioned yourself saying that.
Yeah.
But it's very true.
I just imagine those two cats, you know, playing video games, getting to know each other in Minnesota, okay, talking about when we get our shot, you know. So finally Pete Carroll gives them their shot. And so, you know, these cats, they got code words in the huddle. You know, I mean, this is the way I'm imagining it.
Hey.
That's it.
So would you say that's it? So yeah, man, Sidney, and I like what you said about the knee-jerk reactions, because we all play with those owners who, after week two, week three, they're like, "I'm getting rid of this guy." I picked up Ben Roethlisberger in one league.
Yeah.
Again, in a lot of leagues, I had Jay Cutler as my starting quarterback. After that first week, I felt good about having Jay Cutler as my quarterback. After the second week. And not so much. So somebody actually dropped Ben Roethlisberger in one league right before Pittsburgh's bye because they thought he was going to be injured. I snatched him up. I'm on a hell of a hot streak right now with that team because now I have a legitimate quarterback instead of trying out Jay Cutler every week. You know, or I picked up Pittsburgh's defense. You know, they got off to a slow start. People began to jump ship, you know, knee-jerk reactions. Picked them up. Some guys who I've liked and who've provided me some stability that I've gotten off the waiver wire, Matt Hasselbeck. Now, Matt Hasselbeck hasn't produced the way he was producing when Kenny Britt was there, and I think that's been the big difference between Matt Hasselbeck early and Matt Hasselbeck now. But Matt Hasselbeck has been solid. He hasn't been amazing, but he's been serviceable in a lot of leagues that I'm in. Another guy, and I kind of mentioned him before, those Bay Area receivers. You know, Hayward Bay, Crabtree, those guys have been excellent fill-ins. And I was lucky enough to have DeMarco Murray active when he went off because I had Felix Jones on a couple of my teams. And so on one of them, I was actually able to pick Murray up. And I played him because I didn't have a whole lot of options. I had quite a few guys on bye. I played him. He balled. And I won. And that's great. Some guys I totally missed on, you know, because we all have those guys that we thought that they would be good, and they ain't. No Sean Moreno. I'm done with that dude. Can't mess with him no more. Can't do it. Where are Mike at? Where Mike at?
Cannot play with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it.
Can't do it. So, yeah, no Sean Marino. Mike Williams from Tampa Bay. Can't do it. It's quite a few cats, man. Who else? Who else is out there? I just can't mess with them no more. I had to get rid of them. Dexter McCluster. This is a guy that when Jamal Charles got hurt, I ran and picked him up in every league I was in. I felt great because I was like, yo, this guy is a running back who I can put in wide receiver. And I was like, he's going to be getting, you know, 20-some touches a game through the receiving game. And me and Phil T, me and PAD are in the league where they actually count return yards like they're rushing yards. So I thought, man, McCluster was like the ultimate player. Like, he was like the Swiss Army knife. Like, he was like Superman. Like, he could get you return yards. He was going to get you some receptions and some receiving yards. Plus, he was going to be running the ball. And you could play him at wide receiver as a running back. It's like being able to put three running backs on the field.
I did the same thing, man. I thought I had won the lottery, okay?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Then you look at the Yahoo projections. They project him to score, like, 80 points. Hey, I get 80 points out of one dude? That's what I'm talking about. So, you know, you track this cat out there, he ain't doing nothing for you, man. Swing and a miss. Definitely swing and a miss.
You know what happened? That Tuesday after Charles got hurt, all the reporters were acting, they were asking Coach Haley of the Chiefs, so what are you going to do to fill in the blank in terms of Charles not being here? And all the reporters were like, so it's got to be McCluster, right? It's got to be McCluster. And so Haley comes out and says, well, McCluster only weighs about 180 pounds, so we really want to keep him limited to about 10 touches a game. Man, my heart just dropped. said that.
Because he does. I mean, he only weighs about a buck 80. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I feel you. I was in that same boat. I was like, oh, yeah, McCluster's going to be. This is going to be that move. That makes me look like a genius because cats are going to be getting their heads beat in and they're like, it ain't fair. He got three running backs. And it just didn't work out, man. It just didn't work out. You know, I was hoping to have one of those moments, man, and it didn't work out. I felt real bright. So as we wrap up this fantasy football conversation, you know, in a little at 9:30, we're going to have our guest, Eric Hamilton, come on. We're going to pick this back up. But after we wrap it up, we're going to get into our freestyle. We're going to kind of hit on some topics that are kind of floating around out there, talk about the World Series just wrapped up. We're going to get into that. college hoops is kicking off. So we're going to talk about a few things while we wait for our guests to call in and get on with the real sports guys. If you want to call in at any point tonight, feel free to call in at 1-347-989-0844 and get on with the real sports guys. You know, join the illustrious three-man booth. So, how are you feeling about the teams going forward? Each of us take a turn, give a quick synopsis about what your prospects look like as you finish up the season. I'm going to have D. Wills go ahead and start us off since I made him kind of bring up the rear when we first talked about how our teams were doing.
Well, I mean, I think in the league that I've kind of got myself back to 4-4, I'm feeling like I can make a run for the playoffs. My hope is if I can – people aren't as active trading anymore. Everybody – no one, you know, when I was playing before, a lot of people would trade. I'm not seeing as much activity with trading, but if I can make some moves in the league that I'm about a game out of, sixth place, my goal right now is to get two of the three teams into the playoffs. And then, you know, one of my little things under my that I have that I just want to be the St. Louis Cardinals of fantasy football. That's all I'm trying to do. I look like I'm out 3 or 4 weeks outside of the playoffs and then somehow make that run. That's all I'm trying to do. I just want to get to the playoffs and anything can happen.
Okay, PhD.
Now I'm keeping it real short and sweet. I'm in good shape. I'm trending down to one league. I lost. I actually got a tie a couple of weeks ago. What are the statistical odds and probability of getting a tie in fantasy football? I don't know what it is, but I got one a few weeks ago. But I'm good. You know, every year, just get me to the party. Get me into the playoffs, and I'll make some moves to get my squad to where it needs to be.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. You know, I just want to get to the tournament. I just want to get into the tournament, you know, get into the elimination round, get into the knockout round, and I'm all right. You know, as long as my team is in the hunt, like I said, I got a 3-5, I got a 4-4, I got a 5-3, and I got an 8-0. I'm in the hunt in all of them. I still have a shot. I'm within striking distance in all of them. You know, I'm a good 2-3 week winning streak away in the leagues where I'm under 500 in that 3-5 league. I'm still right there. And at the end of the day, I'm smarter than most of the people in that league. I know this.
I mean, isn't that the beauty, though, of fantasy football? Because 97% of fantasy owners out there are thinking or saying the same thing that you just said.
Right.
In the hunt. All I need is an invite, and I'm smarter than the other people. You know, I mean, it's really a brilliant concept if you think about it.
But you're right. You're absolutely right, man. That's the mindset. That's the mentality that you got to have, man. That's where it's at. So,
That was Matt Millen's issue. He thought that was real football.
If I can just get that next wide out, I'll be able to start three wide receivers on a weekly basis. I don't care if Joy Harris is my starting quarterback.
Right.
We're going to be all right. Oh man! So let's get into talking about this for a moment. All right. Hey Ray, hold on. We got Ray online. Ray has joined us. Ray, you there?
I'm here.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm here. You second smartest one in the league. How's that? What's up with that?
Me and Ray been going back and forth all week about this. You know, about me being 8-0 and me getting lucky, as he called. He said it's luck. No,
Marcus. Our argument is that you're telling everybody you're going to be undefeated.
I am.
You are undefeated at this point. I give you that. Nobody
you said
that
when I was 7-0, now I'm 8-0. What
right.
You say when I'm 9-0?
You're 9-0. What is 9-0? You win fantasy football week 16, and you know that. You know, I'm going back into the playoffs, going a 3-game winning streak, and your prophecy will be had.
Well, we're just going to have to see about that.
Right,
we're just going to have to see about that. We let the numbers bear that out.
I do like your squad, though. I really do. But I also I look at it and I go, I told you, you got a rabbit's foot. You know, you reach in your pocket and you got a warm, fuzzy rabbit's foot. And if I got anything warm and fuzzy, it's because I got a hole in my pocket and I'm itching the bottom of my balls, you know, because my team ain't doing so good. But I'm there, you know.
Oh,
I'm
man,
there.
I love it. I love it. I love it, man.
I'll get there. But I do love your attitude about being smarter than anybody in the league, because when you have a shot to win, when you're still there after week eight and you're still looking at the rest of the league and going, you know, somebody got lucky to be where they're at, and somebody is managing their team right. You know, there's a lot of, especially in the league that we're talking about with you being an 8-0 team, you know, there are some teams that have scored some tremendous amounts of points and have gone up against some windmills. And it's like, you know, no matter what punch they throw, it's being blocked and countered, you know, and it's just funny. I feel for those people, you know, when you are the high, like right now, I think the highest scoring team in that league is in like eighth place.
And yeah,
in very
yeah,
bad,
and
in very,
actually 200 points ahead of me.
And may not get to the playoffs. What's that?
Playoffs.
I said it actually outscored me by 200 points, and I'm in first.
What? Right, and it's just, you look at it, you shake your head, and you laugh, and then you go, you know, and that's why I like the idea that you believe that your team is really that good, because I'm like 20 points behind you and hoping to make the playoffs, you know, which makes my team pretty damn good, too. You know, you just can't say it because my record doesn't show that.
Yeah, no, nah, I agree. I'm a blowhard. That's what I do.
I
like to talk a little smack.
That's what fantasy football is all about, too, though.
Exactly.
You're not the highest.
Be like, all right, well, I ain't in. When I lose, I'm going to say I lost. I ain't going to be like, well, you know, I didn't mean I was going to go undefeated like that. I meant the Latin
right.
sense of the word, undefeated. You know, I'm not going to give it a different meaning. I'm not going to go there. I'm just going to say I lost. I'm going to talk some more smack next week.
Right. And when you get beat, I ain't going to say nothing.
Oh, here you are. I'm going to make it so y'all can't resist. Y'all do not want me to get to 11 or 12 and 0. Y'all don't want that.
I do. I really do. I want you to go like 13 and 0. You know, I want you to get to that 14th game and get just close enough to touch the money, only just hand it over to somebody else. That's the beauty of it. That's the whole humbleness of it all. You know, it's like,
you a cold mother.
Would you hand me that money, please? Thank you. I'll let you hold it for a little bit. You got to touch it. You know, now just hand it over here. Thank you very much.
It's all good. It's all good. I love it.
Yeah.
While we got you on the line, Ray, why don't you give us your take on Tony La Russa calling it quits? And what does this mean for the St. Louis Cardinals up to this point?
What a classy way to go out. You know, can you think of a better way? The gentleman is 67 years old. When a real working man is retiring these days, and, you know, I like the idea that they did bring up the fact that he said, you know, back in August, back when they really weren't, you know, really weren't thinking championship, you know, he was telling the owners and those closest to him, you know, this is my last year. You know, I don't know how much of that he shared with his team. I don't know how much of that, you know, they rallied around to send him out the way that they did. But the fact that he said it back in August, and then he, 3 days after winning the World Series, you know, walks away from the game. You know, Tony doesn't have anything to prove, you know, and it's just what a nice way to go out, you know, because you watch these guys like Papa Joe, you know, just hang their old ass around, and you go, just go home, you know. Somebody wheel that old son bitch home. And with Tony, he was classy to the end, won himself a championship, and really didn't make a big deal about his retirement, you know, to anybody else. But then when the World Series was over, and you know, he was just good to his word, and he bowed out. I thought that was classy.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Phil, PhD, you kind of a resident baseball guy. Well, give us your take on the whole World Series and how it wrapped up, and La Russa retiring, and CeCe signed today, signed on to a 5-year extension, and you got the whole Albert situation. Why don't you, we don't have RJ with us, so we got to go to the PhD.
I'll tell you what, I'm thrilled. I was a little nervous about CeCe leaving the Bronx, man. You know, you guys know I'm a big Yankee fan. When that Twitter announcement came out, you know, and I liked the way he did the Durant type of thing. You know, didn't have a whole press conference, just right there on Twitter. You know what? I'll be back. So I was real excited when that came across the screen. The World Series, man, was one of the better ones I've watched in the last 5 or 6 years. That game 6 is what really sticks out. The 7th inning on was just, it was so exciting. You know, late inning home runs, extra innings, quality pitching, good, you know, questionable but good managing moves. I really enjoyed it. You know, in game 7, you know, it was right there in my backyard, so I was excited to see that St. Louis won. That next day, you know, I'm told everybody was wearing red. You know, the whole city was just really electric. So, you know, I enjoyed it. A lot of people are on Ron Washington really criticizing him, perhaps calling them the Buffalo Bills of baseball now because they've come up short World Series the last 2 years. But you know what? My thought is he got them there. You know, not many experts outside of RJ predicted that they'd be in the World Series. You know, and his team, I mean, he got him to play. His best player, Josh Hamilton, missed a lot of time. He lost Cliff Lee. A lot of people forget that. And he got him back to the World Series. So in my mind, he did a really good job. He did a quality job to get him back to the World Series. And quite honestly, it's just a pitch or two away from them having the parade in Arlington opposed to St. Louis this week. So those are my thoughts.
So where do you see – how do you see the situation with Albert playing out? You know, I think you sent us a text, something to the effect of do the Cardinals now have to sign Albert and bring him back? What do you think?
You know, I was talking to a few of my guys, you know, after they won, like, dang, so does this really force St. Louis to bring Albert back, you know? And a few of my friends was like, man, he wasn't going nowhere. I kind of disagree with that, you know. But I think it does force St. Louis to make a stronger offer than what they were. You know, RJ made a good point last week that, you know, he has a problem with paying folks on past performance. Well, guess what? St. Louis is going to pay an extra 20-30% of what they would have now on past performance because you kind of have to keep Albert. I think they have less leverage because Tony La Russa won't be there. And they seem, you know, over the years, La Russa has always had Pujols' back. You know, Albert is – La Russa is the only manager that Pujols has ever had. So, you know, I liken it to when Phil Jackson decided to retire after that 98 season. That was kind of the precursor to, you know, Pippen leaving, Jordan retiring, and, you know, Rodman. Like, who wants to come into a situation where Rodman is going to be there? So in my mind, if I had to make a move right now, make a guess, I would say that Albert's going to sign somewhere else. So those are my thoughts.
Okay.
But didn't Albert already turn down a 10-year $300 million? Wasn't that last year's contract?
Wasn't it like 9-2?
Yeah, it was like 9 and 200,000, somewhere like that. He wanted 10 years and 300, but they didn't even dream of giving that to him.
And that's, you know, I think Albert Pujols is, you know, Albert Pujols. What do you say? But you know, $30 million, 10-year contract to a 32-year-old? I'm sorry, Al, but you know, I can't back you on that one. I can't, you know, you just won me a World Series. I appreciate all of that. 20 to 30% more, you know. You asked for 300. You know, I had to give you some Clydesdales and everything else to pay you that kind of money. I ain't got it. You know, I can't give you that money.
I would say, given that La Russa's retiring and they just won a World Series, St. Louis is in the best position they could ever be to not pay for past performance. Because in some ways they have an excuse of having a new regime come in and do it. So I think they're from a management standpoint, they're probably in the best position they could be. They got a World Series. They got La Russa, legend, retiring. They're going to have a little bit of, you know, I mean, they don't have to pay for past performance. They'll take a hit, but everybody knows they're going through a transition.
Right. I'm tripping off the fact that Ray said, hey, man, Albert out there, just tell him I ain't got it. I can put something on it.
I got five on it, but that's about it, you know.
Just tell him I ain't got it. Hey, man, if y'all ain't been paying attention, man, layaway is an in vogue thing nowadays, man. Layaway is coming back hard. Sears got a layaway commercial. Walmart, I ain't never seen a layaway commercial.
But
now, be real. Any of y'all ever seen a layaway commercial? Yeah, that's something you ain't never had to advertise. People just did it.
Times are hard out there.
I'll be hitting Albert like, I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a burger today.
To him with the whippy. Seriously, St. Louis going to be at this year. Can we put Albert on layaway? Can we work out a payment plan or something?
When you've got young guys out there like Fielder and some of the others, you know, it's really hard to, you know, because Fielder's just sitting back and waiting to see what Albert does. I wouldn't even, if I'm Prince, I'm waiting to see what Albert does, because it's just inconceivable at his age that you would try to pay. You know that the last 5 years of that contract are going to be suspect. And so I would have to figure out a way to pay Albert with such an incentive that it's almost too hard to refuse. But if he wants 300 and X amount has to be guaranteed, I just, you know, because you don't know, you know, that's the other thing, you know, I ain't paying none of them Latin players over 30 because they might be 40 anyway. Shit, you don't know how old they are. You know.
Ray came in with the Mutombo issue. How old is Mutombo?
Man, Mutombo like 60, man.
You know, like Soriano.
Mutombo the oldest you know, he'd be to ever play a professional sport.
You know, how is he going to be 32, you know, and got a 26-year-old son? What the hell is that? You know, that's what you mean, right?
He's just big for his age, is all.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, a few other things that are going on out there right now. You know, Kevin Durant went out and played some flag football. Now he's challenged LeBron James to a flag football game. Now, I love Kevin Durant. I like what this young man is doing. But has he looked at himself in the mirror? You know, like Pumpkin Jack from Nightmare Before Christmas. Has he looked at LeBron? You don't want none of that boy in a football game. I don't care if it is flag football. You can still get trucked.
He thinks he Randy Moss. You know that. Think he is the skinny then, but he don't know. LeBron come in, what, 250, 260?
Ooh. Yeah, man. Yeah, I don't know about that. It's a good idea. That's one of those things that's a good idea in theory, but I don't know how that's going to play out when you actually start to, when the gears start to grind it. You got the go ahead.
Man, it's like Rocky. It's like in Rocky III, where Rocky wants to fight Hulk Hogan, man, and they get into the ring, and Hulk Hogan's serious about it.
That's right.
That can be dangerous for Durant.
LeBron, yes, LeBron might hit him and then get fined by Goodell.
Hey, we're going to get into it, Dominican Sue, man. We're going to get into that in a little bit. But we got a special guest. We got a special treat for the RSG Nation out there, for the listeners. For those of you who are in tune with the Resistance, we have our fantasy expert, Eric Hamilton, on the line with us. Eric, how you doing, man?
Hey, good evening. Good evening. I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Everybody stop cheering for a moment. Thank you. That's our studio audience.
That's cool. Y'all had me cracking up earlier, man. All these topics that you guys are talking about, man. I was over here dying.
Appreciate it. So I'm gonna pass it to my man PhD. He's gonna quarterback this drive real quick. I'm gonna go in and hit the showers and do a Manny Ramirez going to the wall.
All right, fans, so we got a treat. The people have spoken the last couple of weeks on Twitter and Facebook. They're trying to get their fantasy rosters tight. We're halfway through the season, so we had to go to the sideline, bringing in our third down package and Eric Hamilton. Now, Eric, you know, I'm going to give you a much, much less introduction unlike last time, because you're family now, okay? You know, you just kind of... You know, you're looking under the planter, you find the key, you let yourself in, you know, you're criticizing me because I got cereal but no milk, you know, jelly but no peanut butter. You know, you're family now, so we're just going to ask you to have a seat. But just so the listeners know, we're going to cover with Eric over the next half an hour. We're going to talk about trades. You know, for those in keeper leagues or considering keeper leagues, Eric's a very successful commissioner as well as a successful fantasy player, so we're going to talk a little bit about keeper leagues and what to look for, some players that you may want to have your eye on if you are in a keeper league. And the last thing we'll talk about is IDP, Independent Defensive Player Leagues, because we got a lot of good feedback concerning that in terms of what you gave us last time. So first, man, you know, let's talk about trade. You know, around this time, trade deadline is 2 or 3 weeks away. You're halfway through the season. You know, talk to us about how do you find a trade partner? How do you assess the value and what you need to get to the next level? Just give us some thoughts around that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Phil. Appreciate you. Yeah, you know, you guys were talking about that earlier. This year, I want to say more than previous years, trades are down. And people, you know, you got managers being real stingy with the players this year. And I take an approach. I've got four steps or four rules that I live by when going into a trade. You know, so I'll kind of discuss that a little bit. I think everybody has their own philosophy. But my first thing is I always try to look at my team and assess my strengths and my weaknesses. And then I'm trying to find another team that can complement my team. And realistically, what I want to do, I always prefer to put together a package to get one player. So, you know, I'm notorious for putting, you know, a package of two or three players together to try to get one star player. But I try to put two or three decent players to get that star player. Maybe somebody that I can afford to lose, but still gain that player. But at the same time, give that other team, you know, what they need, if it's a receiver or a defense or something like that. That's my big thing, and, you know, I'm notorious for pushing the multiple two or three decent players to get one good player. Usually the downside of that person on the other side is getting the worst of the trade, giving up their star player. But as long as it works for their baseline, you know, obviously that's all that matters. My second thing I do is I never lead in with my best and final offer. You know, I'll come in and kind of get a feel for, you know, how this guy values that particular player, so maybe just throw out an option to him. Because, I mean, realistically, if you go in with your guns blazing, you don't have anything to look back on. If they say no, you know, you already put your best offer forward. Now you're kind of just sitting there. You got to scratch the deal. You know, I pretty much treat it like it's a real negotiation. That's my fourth thing. My third thing I roll with is that, let's say, for instance, you know, especially with all the injuries to hamstrings and running backs this year, if you see a potential player on the waiver wire and, you know, you don't know who to drop, you don't want to drop somebody, but you don't want to miss out on the next Miles Austin or, you know, Aaron Foster, drop a kicker. Drop the doggone kicker. A kicker, you know, because Janikowski is going to give you one or two more points than, you know, another kicker, drop the doggone kicker and pick a kicker up, you know, before game time. You know, because a lot of things can happen throughout the week. So that's my third thing. My final thing that I look for in it is I will actually target owners that are toward the bottom of the tier. I think one of your hosts talked about since he's on the bottom, he gets a lot of crazy offers. Now, why I try not to throw crazy offers at, you know, at the bottom tier, but they're looking to shake it up a little bit, because when you're out of the playoffs, either you're going to sit and, you know, die with your team, or you're going to try to shake it up and make a playoffs. And Phil, I think probably the best example of this I have is when you and I made that trade for Chris Johnson a few years ago. I think it was Frank Gore and Andre Johnson for Chris Johnson. And I had Chris Johnson, you had Andre Johnson, Frank Gore. And I think after that trade, you went on like a 4 or 5 game win streak and made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Is that about
exactly
right? Yeah.
And I was out of the playoffs. I was 3 or 4 games out when we made the trade.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it was something that fit the right scheme. It was something that Phil was looking for. I was able to hit him with something, get myself something out of it as well. But, yeah, targeting the folks toward the bottom, especially if you're on top, you're okay with taking, you know, a player like a Andre Johnson that was injured for 3 or 4 weeks. You can put him on your bench for a few weeks if you've got enough receivers to kind of hold you afloat. So those are my four things that I think about when going into the trade negotiation and trying to value and look at a trade and try to find potential targets to go after.
I'm going to open it up to the fellas before we hit the next question. What you guys got for them?
This is Devon, and I'm working with this IDP league and trying to, maybe this is like my second year, so I'm still trying to figure it out. Do you have some folks that you think are pretty good people that you would see, like here at the sleepers for IDP league?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I actually got a few. I got some linebackers. I've got some defensive backs, and then I'll have a couple of defensive linemen as well, kind of sleeper sitters out there. You know,
Eric's
I'm going to jump to
Eric. Oh, go. Eric's that guy that's coming into the barbershop. What you need? You need a jersey? Got you. What you need? 5'12", Jordan? I got you.
You silly, man. Yeah, I came with stats for you guys, so. You know, kind of on the linebacker, I'll start with those guys because in the IDP league, again, you know, depending on how the points are divided in that league, most of them are tackle heavy. You know, you're going to get 1 or 2 points per tackle, maybe 1 point or half a point for an assist tackle, depending on your, you know, your playing style and the rules. But I like to look over the last 4 weeks. So, you know, a couple of names that kind of stick out there over the last 4 weeks. London Fletcher, I don't know if you guys seen this old man that I actually wrote off as being too old to still be playing. This guy put up 20 tackles last game, had an interception and a half a sack and a pass deflection. The guy in our league had like 30-something points. I mean, all he does, remember Chris Carter, all he did is catch touchdowns. All this guy does is make tackles. He's a tackle machine. Over the last 4 games, he's averaging 13.7 tackles a game. So, I mean,
yeah,
he's just a monster for tackles.
Yeah, I dropped him 3 weeks ago. Yep.
I've been riding him like a carnival pony myself. So.
He's been kind of up and down, but when he reaches his, you know, he's had some bad matchups in the beginning of the season.
Sure.
But the next three or four weeks. Yeah. The next 3 or 4 weeks, if he's on your waiver wire, I would keep a lookout for London Fletcher. And another gentleman I just told a guy about last week is Derek Johnson out of Kansas City. The guy went bananas this last week. Again, over the last four games, he's averaging 11 tackles a game. He's posted double-digit tackles in the last two games. The guy is, you know, he's on fire. He's having some good matchups. Kansas City's on the field for a while. You know, you kind of see the trend is when the team is bad, you'll get linebackers to stay on the field for a while, so you're going to get tackles. Another guy I really like, may not be out there, but depending, is Navarro Bowman. Now, everybody that has played IDP for a couple of years, they know that Pat Willis is the guy in tackles. Pat Willis is just that guy that always gets tackles. Pat Willis at this point has 54 tackles to the season. The guy that plays inside, the other linebacker that nobody talks about, Bowman, has 65 total tackles.
Damn.
The guy is putting up ridiculous numbers. While Pat Willis is still doing his thing, this guy, Bowman, is a monster because cats are running away from Willis. And remember last year as well, Tequil Spikes, when he played opposite Pat Willis, he put up career numbers. Now he's out in San Diego, he's playing like a bum. So the guy, I mean, you know, obviously right opportunity, plus he obviously has some skills to put up 65 or, you know, that many tackles, 65 tackles, averaging 11 tackles over the last four games. So the guy's doing very, very well out there. One last guy on the linebacker tip is Carlos Dansby out of Miami. The guy had 7 tackles this last weekend. He's averaged about 9 tackles over the last 4 games. So he's been doing very well for linebackers. So those are a couple of guys to kind of keep your eye on and, you know, see if they're out there on that waiver wire, because I like tackle machines. I like guys that's going to be out on that field and they're going to make some tackles. And you know Miami, they're based on their record, they're going to be on the field for quite a while. Washington, you know, Kansas City, those guys, hey, they just going to be out there. a couple safeties for you guys, man, just to look into. A cat named George Wilson. Probably maybe familiar with the guy. His name isn't sweet, nothing like that. But this guy, the Buffalo, the strong safety, he makes tackles and he makes plays. This guy, last game, put up 9 tackles, an interception, and a pass deflection. Has 66 tackles on the season. Listen, I just said Pat Willis had 45. This guy has 66 tackles on the season. This is a safety, George Wilson. Averaging 10 tackles a game for the last 4 games. The guy is just a flat-out beast. He's just a ball hawk. He's like a Troy Polamalu type of cat. I mean, he's a monster. And the second cat on the defensive backs is Cam Chancellor. One of the other managers in the league really loves this guy, but you know, he put up 7 tackles, had an interception and a pass deflection out of Seattle. The guy's big. He's 6'4". I mentioned him last time I was actually on the show. And he has some injury issues. He's got some knee problems. But when he's playing, the guy's a monster. Just keep a lookout for him because the guy can hit. And when you look at his production, when he's on the field, he gets it done. I'm going to jump to linemen just a couple. Oh, yes, go ahead.
Eric, you know I'm going through every time you say a name, I'm seeing if he's available and he's not.
You know, in our league, Phil, we've got some Hawks in our league, Phil. We got some Hawks in our league. It's tough in our league. But like in my other league, some of these guys are still available. So I'm, you know, yeah, we got some Hawks in our league, Phil.
Let me ask you this, Eric, because, you know, IDP is a newer format. So I want to ask you, if you were to be ranking – say a linebacker or a DB, you know, like some of these guys you just mentioned, how would you rank those positions in terms of importance on your team, where you've got, on a traditional fantasy team, you got a quarterback, a couple of running backs, a couple of receivers, maybe a flex position, a defense, a kicker, a tight end? Because for a lot of our listeners, they said that, you know, defensive players are kind of afterthought, kind of like your thoughts with kickers. But where would you put these DBs or strong linebackers in terms of how important they are to be successful?
You know, it's going to come down to your point structure. If it's a tackle-heavy league, like 2 points a tackle as opposed to 1 point a tackle, linebackers are going to be the most important one. But for the most part, it's the middle or the inside linebackers that are going to get the most tackles. So those are going to be the most important. The trend that I'm seeing this year, as opposed to previous years, is more strong safeties getting tackles. And I'm going to assume that a lot of this is because the league is becoming more pass-happy. So you've got strong safeties playing tight ends. You know, the tight ends are athletic nowadays. You got your Jimmy Grahams out there, who is a stud. You've got, you know, your Gates out there, your Gonzalez. You got these big guys, you know, the two New England boys. They're running real routes, and they're big, and they can catch. So you got your strong safeties playing those, and they're also coming up in the box to make those tackles. So, you know, strong safeties are becoming more important. Like, our league, you can start two linebackers, a defensive back, and then you can get an interchangeable, like a flex position for defense. I actually went with two safeties because some of the safeties are putting up numbers that linebackers are putting up. So it's kind of hard, Phil. I would say the elite safeties and defensive backs as far as tackles would rank right there with linebackers. But for the most part, I'm taking linebackers, your Patrick Willis's, you know, your big guys. I'm taking those guys over any kind of safety. So I'm going linebacker one, safeties two, linemen three. And linemen, you know, it's all about the points. How many points are you getting for the sack? That's how you make linemen more important. So that's something that we changed in our league, is we added more value to a sack, you know, because that helps the linemen, you know, get down. And they're putting up big numbers. Like Jared Allen, I think we're getting 6 points a sack this year. So Jared Allen is putting up numbers like, again, Patrick Willis.
Right. Because last week, Arian Foster got me like 25 points. He ran for 100 yards, scored a touchdown, caught a couple of balls. But James Laurinaitis got me 30 points.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the key. That's the key. A lot of people, again, like you mentioned, they look at defense as afterthought. And I guarantee you, if you're playing, even in, because another league I'm in, it's just 1 point a tackle for an assist or solo. And those numbers add up. So for that 30 that you got in our league, it may only be 17 in another league. But that is a lot of points, because for a running back or receiver, you got to have a pretty good game to put up those kind of numbers. So, you know, in our league, if you look at our top and our bottom, the difference between the four people at the top and the eight people at the bottom, it's mostly good defense. You got defensive guys, if you got four spots, they're putting up 80 points. So that's the difference between you having a 150, you know, point production to a 250, you know, or somewhere around there, 200 plus. So if you're in the IDP, do not think of it as an afterthought. You are looking for tackle-heavy guys, and you would prefer somebody on a bad defense that's going to be out there all day, like a Laurinaitis, you know, like a Cam Chandler, those guys that are just on bad teams, just bad football, and they'll be out there just tackling all day.
So I got a last question for Eric, but before we get to that, I want to, again, we're doing roundtable style, so I want to open it up to the fellas if you guys got any other questions for him at this point.
I got a question. Eric, so, you know,
yes,
you
sir.
Have guys like Chris Johnson of Tennessee, Mike Williams, guys who have underachieved. Give some owners out there some advice on what to do with these guys. Do you trade them? Do you hang on to them? What do you do with some of these guys who, you know, a Phillip Rivers, you know, Eli is better.
Phillip Rivers. Let's talk about Phillip Rivers.
you know, the studs, like Phillip Rivers, man, is a stud. He's having a it's a lot of change going on, man, and, you know, he really misses Darren Sproles. That was his bailout guy. When Phillip Rivers got in trouble, he didn't have to force it down the field to Jackson. He dumped it off to Sproles. And you don't have that anymore. Drew Brees doesn't. You see what Darren Sproles is doing for New Orleans. In our league, he's a top five or six, something like that, top seven running back because he's catching out of the backfield. So he's missing that safety net. I don't think that's all of it, but that just changes the dynamics. And I think Phil Rivers will get it, you know, he'll get it under control. He'll get it back. I mean, he's struggling right now, but he's an elite quarterback, so he'll fix it. You know, the mechanics are still there. He can still throw the ball. He's just something's going on with him. It may be mental at this point. Something's in his head. But he's a stud. He knows how to play football. He'll get it together. Now, Chris Johnson, on the other hand, this is it's a tough one with Chris Johnson. I'm going to be honest with you, because Chris, you feel like he is a stud. He just put up 2,000 yards a couple of years ago, so he should be okay. But if you look at the end of last year, he didn't really finish the year very well. He did not at all. Then you hold out for a while for this money. You didn't have any practice. And then, you know, with the shortened season, and now you got a new quarterback. You know, Vince Young is gone. Now you've got Hasselbeck, who's been playing very well. But, again, the dynamics have changed. You know, when I watched this last game, the holes weren't necessarily big like they used to be for him. You know, Chris Johnson excels when he can get through that first level. He'll make the linebacker miss. He'll make the safety miss. But he's not getting to that point right now because he's getting hit before he can really get past the line. And that's the difference that I see. I think Ringer is a little bit stronger, and he can get in between. You know, he can kind of maneuver a little bit. But that wasn't ever Chris Johnson's stilo. You know, he wasn't going to roll you over. So I'm almost I've lost confidence in Chris Johnson. I wouldn't try to trade for him anymore. I thought that this Indianapolis game was going to be the one to get him back on his feet, and I'm not comfortable at this point. Total honesty. I wouldn't trade for the guy. Yeah, man, I'm bailing out on Chris Johnson. I can't do it, man.
All right. Any other players out there that you think it's time to, you know, I mentioned Mike Williams from Tampa. He's a guy who a lot of people took, you know, fourth, fifth round of a kind of a standard league draft. And he hasn't panned out.
Well, see, let me know about Mike Williams. Actually, Mike Williams is one of the top seven receivers in targets. And another thing I haven't talked about, but targets are very important. Targets are just passes that are thrown to the receiver. He gets a lot of passes thrown his way. He's in the top seven. I didn't bring the stats with me on this one. I didn't think I was going to talk about this cat, but he's in the top seven in targets. He's just not catching them. And whether it's bad balls or whether it's him not catching, he's just not catching the passes, but the opportunities are there. You know, it's kind of like getting 40 carries a game, but you're only putting up 75 yards. But the targets are coming to him. So I think he'll be okay. At some point, you got to catch these balls, or they got to be better throwing balls or whatever. But, you know, his targets aren't too far behind, you know, the Calvin Johnsons of the world, maybe by 10 balls. So, you know, he's getting balls thrown his way. But I do have a couple guys that I'm going to talk about for the, you know, that I think you should buy low on and that you should sell high on.
So for the buy low, go ahead and get into that.
Yeah, so for the buy low, I'm talking about guys that the perceived value is not there. Either they're having a few bad games or, you know, they're just not doing, and Chris Johnson won't be on his list either, just let you know. But, you know, these are guys that just, you know, they're just not getting it done over the last couple of weeks for whatever reason. And again, when we talk about perceived value, if you are owner that is 3-5, if you're 2-6, at this point you're getting frustrated with some of these players. So, you know, like Vincent Jackson is one. Now, Vincent Jackson was drafted. I'm going to say he was a second tier, maybe first tier receiver for a lot of teams, you know, in the draft. The guy's only had two scores so far. He's only scored in two games. So I'm going to say scored in two games. And he's topped 63 yards twice. But this is the thing. He's had very, very tough matchups. But his next six games, five of his next six games are against the 19th or worse pass defense. So his life will get better. He won't have to face Darrell Revis, you know, and Champ Bailey too many more times. You know, he gets a nice run, and that's going to be right in time to end off that season. You know, Antonio Gates is back. Ryan Matthews, if this guy can ever stay healthy. But this guy, bottom line, he's 6'5", 230. He's a monster. This is a guy that I think you should buy low on right now, and I think you can ride out, you know, wide receiver one type of potential for the rest of the year. I think Vincent is a flat-out, you know, stud. He's just going through a rough patch. Other guy is Miles Austin, and I won't talk too much on Miles. That's my guy. But, you know, I know that people are getting frustrated with Miles. You know, at the beginning of the season, he came out 230 yards, four scores in the first two games. He was a stud. Then, you know, he had that little hamstring injury, took some time off. He's had about 117 yards, you know, over the last three games since he returned. But
his schedule gets easier as well. Next five games are against Seattle, Buffalo, Washington, Miami, and Arizona. So there will be life for Miles Austin. So that's another guy that I say, if you can get him low, get him, because the owners are getting frustrated. They're going to be trying to, you know, make moves with these guys because they're just not producing that, at the level that they should. Last guy on the buy low is Julio Jones. Now, the only reason that this guy, he's a flat-out stud, but the only reason this guy is on the buy low is because he's been out with an injury, and there was also a bye week that took place. So it's a possibility that his owners have kind of forgot about how good this guy is. So, again, you know, this is a guy that you can possibly get at a low value and still and be able to cash in on wide receiver one, wide receiver two type of potential going into the later frames. The guy's 6'3", he's 220. He's a big guy. He's averaging 85.5 yards a game for the games that he's been in, that he's actually played, 85.5 yards. So the guy is just getting it done. So that's a guy to target, but I think you should try to get to him soon before this next upcoming game, before everybody realizes how, you know, this guy's still a stud. And when you see him in action, you know, because they feed the ball to him. So that's my buy lows. Following buy lows, I got a couple of buy highs. And again, these are sell highs, So these are guys that I think that have hit their potential and you should try to move them. One is Plaxico Burress. He had a bye week, but his last game he had 3 touchdowns. Okay? But I can guarantee you, don't let the name fool you. I know everybody wanna go back to Plax in this day and et cetera, et cetera. You know, he's past his prime. Okay, this cat is past his prime. This is the time to sell Plax while he's coming off of the 3-touchdown performance. His stock won't get too much more higher than this 3-touchdown performance. So if you can trade him for, you know, a Greg Little or a Percy Harvin, something like that, I think that'll be a good value, because I don't think that that Plax is going to continue to get it done. But this is the time to sell him coming off of that 3-touchdown performance. The last guy, and some people might be hurt by this, is Anquan Boldin. Now, the only reason I say Anquan, only reason I say Quan is he's coming off a monster game against his former team. He had to show Larry Fitzgerald he can do it. He had 7 receptions, 145 yards. But let's go back a couple of weeks. The guy has been inconsistent, and it's partially due to, you know, Joe Flacco and his up-and-down inconsistent self. But the guy, week 4 against the Jets, he had 1 reception for 28 yards. Against Houston, he had 8 for 132, then down again in Jacksonville, 4 for 40. The guy's just been inconsistent. And if you are trying to make that playoff push, the last thing you want is inconsistency, because that's going to be the biggest thing to kill you, is inconsistent players. You want guys that are going to consistently post, give you those 20, 25 points a game or whatnot. Those are the kind of guys you're looking for, not the 30 here and the 5 here. That just won't get it done. You won't. It'd be tough to get a championship with those numbers. Those are my sell highs.
Excellent. So we're gonna ask that you hang on with us for a moment.
We're gonna
jump into our pick six really quick. We're gonna zip through the pick six because we gotta get into our NBA talk. You know, tonight was the first night of the opening, supposed to be the first night of the season. So we got a little special thing that we're gonna do. But we're gonna get into the pick six before we get into this last half hour. So last week's pick six, D. Wills went 5-1. He's sitting in first place still at 31-17. PhD went 4-2. He's sitting at 29-19, so 2 games back. And Game Change is still bringing up the rear at 4-2, and overall at 26-22. So for this week, we got for those of you out there who don't know how to pick six goals, we got 3 pro games, 3 college games. We pick them. We see how we do the next week. All right, so 3 NFL games this week. First game, we have the New York Jets at the Buffalo Bills. PAC and I both took the Jets. D. Wills, who are you taking in that game?
I'm gonna go with Buffalo.
All right. D. Wills is going Buffalo at home. Ray, who are you taking?
Damn, I was going to go with Buffalo, but I don't follow D with nothing, so I'm going to have to go with the Jets.
Loving it.
I guess you didn't hear nothing about that 5-1 last week.
I wasn't there.
Oh, I gotta hit you off real quick, Ray.
I want winners.
By yourself.
So you going with the Jets on that one, Ray?
I'll go with the Jets on that one.
All right, Eric, who are you taking?
I'm taking the Buffalo Bills. That opportunistic defense is going to pick six, Mark Sanchez.
All right. Second game, we got Green Bay at San Diego. Of course, I took Green Bay because I can't stand Phillip Rivers. Phil T took San Diego. D. Wills, who you taking?
I want to win something in a San Diego game, and I'm gonna take Green Bay.
All right, Ray, who you taking?
Damn, again? No, I have to take Green Bay, and I got to take Green Bay until they show me why they would lose a ball game.
Eric, who you taking? San Diego or Green Bay?
That's Green Bay, baby. Green Bay.
All right. Third NFL game, the grudge match, the blood feud. We got Baltimore going into Pittsburgh. I took Pittsburgh. Phil T, you took Pittsburgh, correct?
No, I took Baltimore.
Okay, he got Baltimore. I don't have his picks up. He did send his picks in earlier. Listeners out there, I'm not, you know. He took Baltimore. All right. Ray, who you taking?
Oh, man, I Ben has been playing so well. I still like Baltimore. I think that they can get it done. I think Pittsburgh will outthink themselves this week.
Devon, let me guess who you taking.
Black and yellow.
Eric, and who you taking?
I'm taking Pittsburgh to get their redemption back. They're going to win.
All right, excellent. Now, this is also a very big weekend in NCAA football. The first game we got on the docket is we got South Carolina, which is, I think, ranked number 8, going into number 7, Arkansas. For this game, I had Arkansas. Phil T, who did you take?
I'm taking Arkansas. Go Hogs.
All right. D. Wills, who are you going with, South Carolina or Arkansas?
South Carolina's like without everybody, and they still rank 8th.
Yeah,
I'm going Arkansas.
All right, Ray, who you taking?
I have to go Arkansas as well.
All right, Eric,
I got to go with the favorite, which is Arkansas.
All right, no surprises there. All right, this next one is hard as hell to pick though. We got LSU at Alabama. I'm going LSU on the road. Phil T went LSU on the road. Ray, who you going?
Go with Alabama. I don't think, you know, that they are so great that they'll go undefeated. And this might be
okay.
This might be the game.
All right. Devon, who you taking?
Yeah, I don't think this is hard at all. I'll go to Alabama.
Wow.
The quarterbacks of LSU going to come back and bite them.
Eric, who you got?
Alabama too much. They're going to win.
All right. Now, the last game of the week, we got Kansas State, top 10 team, going into play right now, the number 3 ranked BCS team, Oklahoma State. This was a hard one for me because I don't like Oklahoma State and I don't really trust them. I like Justin Blackman. I think he's going to be an excellent player at the next level. I'm going Oklahoma State. Phil T, you went Oklahoma State, correct?
Yep, I like them big.
All right. Yeah, he did say that. He wrote that in. He said he liked them big. So, Phil T's got Oklahoma State. Devon, who you got?
Man, you know I like Oklahoma State. I think they take the champs. But I was like, Bill Snyder, can you do it? Nah, he can't do it. He can't do it. It's going to be Oklahoma State.
All right, Ray, who you got?
Give me Oklahoma State.
All right, Eric.
I'm going to change it up and go with Kansas State. I think they pull it off.
Woo!
Woo!
Got the upset. That's an upset to me. That's an upset on the road.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking I should alert myself. I can't go, though.
Well, that's the pick six. I'd like to thank our guest, Eric Hamilton, for joining us, getting everybody ready for the second half of the fantasy football season. He gave us a lot of good information.
Hopefully you were taking notes, and if you were, you should be ready to rule your league. So I'd like to say thank you again to Eric. We have the studio audience give this man a round of applause. I always like to lay in the background yelling real loud.
Yeah. Wait, before he goes, let me just say I appreciate the fact that he gave Phil T nothing. Absolutely nothing to go on. which is a, you know, a sign of a true fantasy guru, you know. He had little
yeah, that's a gamesmanship.
Gave Phil T nothing.
I purposely found players that weren't available in our league as I was preparing
exactly.
for the show. Just
exactly.
Yeah, I have my orange highlighter ready, but I haven't even taken the cap off. You know,
All right, so thanks again, Eric. Man, you have a great evening. Again, you're part of the RSG fam, so you are welcome to come back anytime, brother. Be easy.
Hey, appreciate it. Keep it moving. Excellent job, everybody. We'll see you later.
Take care.
All right, so tonight is November 1st, 11-1-11, and tonight was supposed to be the start of the NBA basketball season. But I don't know about you. I don't know if you looked around, but ain't no NBA basketball being played right now. So, you know, here with the Real Sports Guys, we are true blue NBA fans. We love the pro game. We love to watch the game. We love to talk the game. There ain't nothing to talk about right now. So we engaged in a little experiment. We were given a task last week to each come up with our own structure. If we could just fix this whole problem, how would we fix it? So we were given a couple of things to look at, and this is what we're going to do for the five on the black-hand side to finish out the show. We're going to look at money, salary cap, player contract structure, retraction or relocation of teams, and then the scheduling and playoff format. We're going to go through each of these areas, and each of us is going to lay out kind of our plan of fixing the current system. So we're going to get into this real quick. I'm going to go ahead and hit the sound. If I can find it real
five,
quick.
Five, on the black-hand side.
Yes, sir. So the first piece we're going to talk about is the money. And with the money, what we're talking about is how in each of our fictional NBA new CBAs, how are we going to structure the split of the money? Now, what we're going to do is, with these different systems, we're going to post them up on the Real Sports Guys Facebook page and allow fans to go on and vote for which system they feel like is the best. It's set up the best. It's going to work the best. It's going to create the best league. And we're going to allow the listeners out there to decide. So the money. I'm gonna talk this one to my man Phil T first. PhD, how you going to split up this money?
I'm going to go 50-50. Honestly, I like 50-50 because it just seems fair. The owners take on all the risk in terms of the business model. They take on the expenses. And if you look at other business models in terms of non-sports, this is kind of how it works. Now, what does this mean? Well, instead of Kevin Garnett making $28 million 2 or 3 years ago, maybe he'd be making 19 or 20. And again, for the health of the league, I think this is a sacrifice that players need to make.
Excellent. Now, I'll touch base on my plan. I agree in a 50-50 split as well. I had a slight tweak in how the money was going to be split, in that the 50-50 of the BRI, which is basketball-related income, which is everything from marketing to ticket sales, promotions, all of that money that's generated by the league, I have that as a 50-50 split, but then I separated. In my system, I separated the TV money because I agree with Phil. The owners take all of the risk as far as, you know, managing expenses, promoting the league, promoting their teams. The owners, that should be split up 50-50. I believe that's fair. But when it comes to the TV revenue, I pulled that pile of money out, and I'm going to divide that up 52-48 in favor of the players. Why? Because I ain't never turned on an NBA game to watch no damn owners. So that's why I'm doing that. And within that, what I'm going to do to keep it competitive, to keep it competitive is we all know the best teams get on TV. So the more times your TV is shown of that 48% that the owners get, the more times your TV is shown, the more shares of that 48% you get. So what I would like to believe is that would compel owners to try and put out at least an interesting product, an entertaining product, so that they can get on TV more and get some more of that TV money. So that's why I decided to go with that structure. D. Wills, where do you stand?
Well, I'm consistent with you on the 50-50 split. I actually like when I saw your idea. I like the idea that you have with the way you split the TV money. Actually is like what I like. But I was pretty much where Phil was. I think a 50-50 split is where I like it, but I could be swayed with how you separate out the TV money.
All right. So now we're going to touch base on the salary cap structure. All right. I'm gonna jump in on this one first. All right. So with the salary cap structure.
Are you going to leave anything for us? Because yours is like Einstein. I love it.
Hey, don't have me break out that Derek Anderson clip.
Bring it on. Let's do it.
Don't have me get Derek Anderson snapping out here, man.
I love you went all the way in on this one.
Yeah, you know that's I'm trying, man. I'm trying, you know, I'm trying to take this serious, man. I'm serious about mine. So I go with no cap. No salary cap whatsoever, all right? I think that benefits the players. But what there is going to be in place is a luxury threshold. And I borrowed this idea from Mark Cuban. I ain't gonna plagiarize. This is the Cuban idea. And the threshold is going to be set at 52 mil. So 52 million, so the owners get a slight reduction in the salary cap. On average, it's usually around 50, 55 million. So there's a luxury threshold. But then I also added in a floor. All right, you gotta at least have a cap of $47 million. Okay, you can't go below $47 million. Now, with the luxury threshold, there's a luxury tax, which basically means you're gonna pay $1.50 for every dollar. Right now, the luxury tax is $1 for $1. I'm gonna up that a little bit. But then I also got what's called the miser tax for them cheap bastards out there, for the Donald Sterlings of the world. I got a miser tax. And what we're going to do with that is, for every dollar under that $47 million floor, you got to pay $1.50 in for every dollar. So that's going to keep it. Again, I'm trying to keep it competitive, and we ain't going to have no Donald Sterling running around not paying people. That's what I would like to see, all right? So that's how I'm gonna, that's what my salary cap structure looks like. D-Wills, explain your cap system.
Well, I have a college, so I like, and I'm with the ceiling and the floor. I was at $59 million. And then the floor at $40 million, which is a little bit low. But I want to penalize a team if they're in the bottom three for two consecutive years. So I like the idea of a $1.50 per person, but I'm looking at an additional tax for those folks who are consistently not investing. If you're in there for consecutive years, then there's a penalty on top of it that you have to deal with. So wrinkle.
Okay, that's a nice wrinkle. I like that wrinkle. PhD.
Yeah, so this was interesting for me in terms of developing the salary cap structure because I'm always conflicted in terms of if you penalize teams for not investing in players, does that contribute to inflated value? You know, why Brady as of last year was still getting paid $20 million a year? You know, but at the end of the day, I couldn't think of a better idea in how to keep teams competitive. I think there will certainly be a cap, unlike baseball. I think basketball needs to keep the salary cap. I think it should be a hard cap with no luxury tax, and teams should be penalized for not utilizing 80 to 85% of that cap. Okay? If you look at, let's look at the 2008-2009 season. We got data, not data, but data for it. You know, the salary cap is about 55 to 60 million, but yet the Mavericks, their salary was 97 million. The Cavaliers and LeBron was still there, it was 90 million. Okay? So these teams are gladly paying this luxury tax to be competitive. So my option 1B would be, okay, let's have a luxury tax, but we're going to tax you hard. We're going to tax you 40% of what you go over. Okay? I'm a fan of keeping the Larry Bird exception in place. For the listeners not familiar with that, the Larry Bird exception pretty much says that you can go over your cap to re-sign a player that was already on your roster. Okay? So Chris Paul, for example, I'm not sure if he's a free agent this year or next year. That would mean that the
– What year? Ain't no season.
That's right.
I'm just messing with you.
So New Orleans will be able to re-sign him, go over the cap. They get taxed for doing it. If we go with a soft cap, with a luxury tax, I would say 110% of that cap is the max, regardless of Larry Bird exception or not. So right now, teams are spending around $70 million on average. I would set the cap around where it's at right now. Right now, it's about $58 to $60 million. I would dip it down a little bit, 55 to 60. And to reduce cost, I would actually cut rookies' wages down and the veteran minimum as well that we'll get into in a little bit.
Nice. Some interesting changes there. I do like keeping the Larry Bird exception. That's something I keep in my system too, because I think, you know, you want to allow teams that flexibility to keep guys who are already in the system. So then we're going to look at player contracts. I'm going to toss this one to D-Wills. Under your new system, D-Wills, what does a player contract look like?
Yeah, what I'm looking at is this is a little bit, and I'm playing with this one a little bit, so I'm out there a little bit. The only guaranteed contracts are in the first 2-3 years of your deal. So allowing people to really secure that young talent, with the Larry Bird exception in there, so if you have like your Durant, something like that, you got the ability to re-sign. I think that's the first part. And then I've been trying to play around with this idea of what your veteran minimum would be, and thinking about beyond your first and second, beyond like the second and third year of the deal, having it be that given a little bit more of a luxury on the signing bonus, but only having to guarantee 1 or 2 years of those deals. So, you know, to try to minimize on what I call the John Concak experience, you get locked into deals long term. That you could maybe max out on, and I'm not, you know, putting a number in, but maybe, you know, max out on, you know, signing bonus around, you know, 10, 12 million. You guarantee the first couple years of those deals, but after that, so you could have a large contract, but you have a chance to get out of it after 1 or 2 years of the deal. But the rookie contracts would be guaranteed, I think, through the first 3 years. So you have a chance to at least acquire your young talent.
Okay, I like that. PhD, where you going with the player contract structure, brother?
Yeah, I'm going to think through this. So right now, if you look at the big four sports in North America, you got NFL, Major League Baseball, hockey, and basketball. The average player salary in the NFL is about $2 million per year. In baseball, it's around $3.3 million. Hockey, it's about $2.5 million. For basketball, it's $5 million. And this is one of the reasons why we're having so many, you know, like, so a lot of these owners are having to do. One of the things I would do is try to reduce this average salary to $3 or $4 million range. Again, with unions, this is really tough to ask somebody to work as hard or harder with pay them. Other thing I look at is a max length of 3 to 4 years in terms of contracts. The downside of this is teams are probably turning their rosters every 3 or 4 years. But if you take a look at it, this is already happening, It helps make the team more accountable to their fans and stars to remain competitive. Guaranteed deal. I would look at a scale somewhat like the NFL uses in terms of trades. So to cut down on the amount of trades that we have at the trade deadline and so forth, I would actually have a sliding scale where depending on what year the player is on the deal, the team trading still gets stuck with part of their salary. So let's say a couple years ago, Antoine Jameson got traded from Washington to Cleveland when LeBron was still there. If he hypothetically still had 2 years left in his deal, the Wizards would be stuck with half the salary that was still out towards his cap. If you go with shorter contracts, I think you want to keep continuity. So this would be one to discourage the number of trades that you will see. Rookie deals, I'd look at something very, very similar to what we have. I got a couple of big ideas that we'll get into a little bit later.
Okay. Okay, so for my player contract system, I'm with Phil T. I want to see that average salary get in between that 2 mil to 3 mil range. I want to bring that down. I'm looking at like a max deal is 4 years with an optional for up to 2 additional years. So you can be 4 or you can bump that up to 6. I'd say the average deal in the league would be about 2 years. I think that's appropriate, give teams flexibility. You know, with bird exemptions, teams can keep guys on. Rookie deals are going to be 2 to 4 years depending upon draft position, and you have a similar rookie wage scale. I like Phil's idea of bringing that down a little bit. Now, where mine is a little bit different is I have this idea that there should be a performance salary congruence committee. Now, what that means is your performance needs to match your salary based upon like peers. Point example, Rashad Lewis is going to make 20 mil this coming season whenever it gets going. If you look at, you're looking at the other guys who make 20 mil, I say they need to put together a metrics board. And this metrics board is going to use advanced metric statistics to, you know, whether it's win shares or PER or whatever kind of metric, they decide on, the union can decide on the metrics, you can decide on the numbers that are used. But that's how you're going to grade out who's actually contributing statistically to wins. Their statistical performance is on par with like-paid peers, and their wins contributed is on par to like-paid peers, so that you don't have Rashard Lewis making 20 mil. So you got this metrics board. They evaluate each contract at the end of the season, right? If you underperform compared to like peers, then the team gets an opt-out. The team can opt out of your deal, release you with no penalty, or renegotiate. Now, what the metrics board will do is they'll suggest a ceiling to increase the player's salary depending upon their performance, and a floor. So they'll suggest a ceiling and suggest a floor. That this is the minimum this guy should be paid, but this is the maximum this guy should be paid to help those dumbass owners out who don't seem to be able to realize that you don't give Rashard Lewis $20 million. So I'm going to help him out. I'm going to put something in place to help him out. All right? So teams can do that if a player underperforms. Now, if a player overperforms, he has the right to renegotiate. He can opt out and become a free agent if he wants to. So, you know, if you have a guy like Wes Matthews who was getting paid a certain amount of money as a rookie free agent, he outperforms that, he can opt out and say, well, I'm going to become a free agent and see if I can get more money, you know, based upon his metrics and his stats. If it says that, you know, he's making $480,000 a year in comparison to other guys, he's actually producing on the level of a guy who should be making 3, 4, 5, 6 million a year, then he can go out and try and get that because that's what his worth is. So that's the system that I would put in place. As far as trades go, I'd say that you don't have to match money on trades anymore. The reason is I want to see more flexibility. I want to see more movement. That's why I got the opt-outs in there. I want to see players and teams be able to move guys who aren't performing. The Sixers shouldn't be stuck with Elton Brand, paying him $15 million a year when he's giving you 15 points and 7 rebounds a game. That's not $15 million worth of production. So under my system, they would be able to say, well, you're not producing at that level. What you're producing more like is at a player who should be paid maybe $7 or $8 million. So that's what we're going to offer you. If you don't want it,
you can opt out. We'll release you, and you can go on and find a new place that'll pay you what you want to be paid. In the same sense, like I said, I gave the Wes Matthews example. Wes Matthews can say, hey, I'm averaging, you know, as an undrafted rookie, I'm averaging, you know, 30 minutes a night, 9 points a game. I'm making $400,000 this year. I should probably be making more than that. So I'm going to bounce. I'm going to see if I can get more money somewhere else. This is what I should be paid based upon people who get the numbers I get and contribute the way I contribute. That's what I'm going to go get. You guys can either pay me that or you can let me walk. So I think that'll give more flexibility. That'll also give players some incentive to overperform and to keep going and keep playing. So it's like a guaranteed system or a non-guaranteed system still with guarantees. So that's why I put that in place. And then with the trades, at the end of the season, if you're traded to a team, at the end of the season, you and the team both can say, this ain't work, bye. You know, the player can opt out or the team can opt out at the end of that trade season. Now, if that doesn't happen, then they're stuck with each other for the duration of that player's contract unless he underperforms or overperforms. What I want to see is more movement and more flexibility for teams. I don't like seeing teams getting stuck like a Cleveland or, you know, some of these teams who have horrible, like the Knicks were for so long, where they have just horrible cap situations and they can't get out of it. And I also don't like seeing guys getting overpaid or underpaid when they're outperforming. Drew Gooden, horrible contract that the Bucks gave him. They should be able to get rid of that. They should be able to move that, do something with that, you know. He's underperformed. He's not worth that money. So that's my player contract structure. Now the next piece is relocation and retraction of teams. Now we got about 4 minutes left, so we're gonna have to keep this real crispy. I'm gonna go ahead and go in and toss this one to PhD.
Right now there's 30 teams. I'd like to see it closer to 26. That raises a question, who are you going to get rid of? Well, I'll get rid of Minnesota, Sacramento, Clippers, and the Nets with the caveat of perhaps finding a Vegas franchise. I think Vegas is a market that's screaming for a team and would probably support it.
All right. D-Wills.
Well, I put together kind of, the four kind of divisional structure. And so my East Coast is Philly, New York, Boston, Brooklyn, Washington, Miami. Central is Detroit, Chicago, Indiana, Milwaukee, St. Louis, and I'm going to keep Memphis. And then Southwest is Denver, Dallas, Houston, Vegas, San Antonio, OK City. And then the West is Phoenix, L.A., Lakers, Portland, Golden State, Utah, and then put a franchise back in Seattle.
Excellent. So I went from 30 to 24 teams. I got rid of Minnesota, Sacramento, Memphis. Hey, I ain't playing.
Yeah, I guess not.
Memphis, New Orleans, Toronto, and Charlotte. All of them go to hell. I moved the Clippers out of L.A. because L.A. is always going to be a Laker town. I moved the Clippers to Vegas. And unfortunately, I had to move the Bucks out of Wisconsin to Kansas City because people in Wisconsin don't give a damn about the Bucks, unfortunately. So I moved them to Kansas City. Kansas is a good basketball state. You know, the Jayhawks have thrived there. And I think Missouri, Kansas area right there, I think is a prime spot. And Kansas got a nice new arena with the Sprint Center. So I even looked that up to see if they had an arena that would support a team, and they got a nice spanking new arena 4 years old, so that'll hold that down. So that's what I did with relocating. And I think we all agreed that Vegas needed a team. So I'm going to pass this one off to Phil T, and I want him to talk about his – because he had a real interesting thing with the way he structured his season and the scheduling that I like. I didn't do it in mine, but I liked it when I saw it in his. And I did say I liked it. I liked it. So, Phil T, go ahead and wrap that up. We got about a minute, brother.
Well, the NBA really hasn't looked at tinkering with their schedule since the mid-60s, late 70s. And my big idea is to move the season from the beginning of November through June, where the playoffs or the finals are, move that back to the end of December, beginning of January, and run it through August. Why? Well,
it's a losing battle against football in terms of the audience. And I think you can bite into that baseball audience, because back in the 60s and 70s, basketball was losing to baseball. And now I think baseball fans are, you know, there's not as much of a carryover to basketball fans. I think that would increase revenues. Parents are probably more likely to take their little kids to air-conditioned arenas opposed to baseball in August in 9,200 degrees in the Midwest. So that's my big idea, move the schedule back 60 days.
See, I love that idea, because I was looking – that's part of the reason I shortened the schedule in my framework as well to 58 games. I put it in 12 division games. I got three divisions in each conference, 3 four-team divisions, 12 teams in each league. So they play 12 division games. You play 22 conference games. You play 12 interconference games. And then you got 10 special kind of rivalry games. And I borrowed this from the NFL framework, the way they do their scheduling, because I think that's how the NFL preserves their parity, is the way they schedule. You know, certain teams, you get a fifth place. That's why, you know, you have some teams that are good one year, then the next year they get that tougher schedule, St. Louis Rams, and then they're not as good. I'm naming names. You know what I'm saying? And so I like that format, and I like that structure. And I love that idea, Phil, because I think that – because in the summer, I would love to be able to go to a league game. I would love to be able to go to an NBA game in the summertime. I think that would be perfect. So I like pushing it back. I kind of had it starting at the usual time. And the interesting thing about mine was that I had it at 4 games a week in a 29-week season. So you got 29 weeks and you got 4 games a week. You got one conference will play all their games on Thursday and Saturday, and then one we'll go Friday, Sunday, and then they'll swap each week. So on a Friday, Sunday, you're going to have Western Conference games. On a Thursday, Saturday, you have Eastern Conference games, and then next week it'll swap. And the reason I did that is because with the NBA, the games aren't enough of an event. And I figure if you got 2 games a week, it makes the games – I think that's better for TV. Because Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday are the only times most people watch NBA anyway. You know, there may be a Tuesday night game on anyway, but right now those are the prime days when the NBA is, when the league is on. So why not just cut out, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday and have those be days off, and then have teams play every other day on Thursday, Saturday, and then Friday, Sunday. I think it extends careers. Guys can play longer. You also get a different product because guys are fresher. Guys aren't coming off of long road trips, you know, 3-game road swings, or whatever. You know, guys play 2 games, they give it everything they got, they get off the floor. I think that's a better product. I think eventually you'll see better ball, and the rosters will be tighter. So that's kind of the structure I got. D. Wills.
I was laughing because I got, and I didn't see yours, Phil. I said December 1st. That was the first thing I said. Start December 1st, get away from from football. I almost pushed it out past the Super Bowl. But then I went back to December 1st, and I looked for all the things that Phil said about where baseball is. I like the idea of moving in towards the summer. I agree that they're, you know, families are more likely. You get some kids when they're out of school. You get playoff games at times where it's very much downtime in sports, and people are just kind of revving up for football. I think that, to me, I think that's a realistic thing that the NBA should look at. Because people just aren't engaging in the game in you know, the early part of the season. But right around December, people start thinking, you know, if the NBA season start, you know, that's about, you know, Christmas Day game. You know, so
exactly,
you wind up and so you get the extra push with the Christmas Day game. Yeah, man, I think that's an incredible idea.
Yeah, I try to preserve some of that November with Thanksgiving Day. I try to maybe, you know, that's why I kind of try. But I love the calendar scheduling of your format. I like that because that can be, because that's the thing too. Nobody cares that the season didn't start today, but it's diehard.
Right.
And there's a reason for that, because it's football going to be played all weekend. So I like that idea. I like that idea a lot.
I think it was going to be December 1st or not, but I was going to say, you know, always that Wednesday or Thursday after Thanksgiving, because now you could advertise during that football crowd.
Mm-hmm.
We're at home, you know, eating. You could be advertising the kickoff for the NBA. You could be even talking about, you know, the Christmas Day game. You could be doing a lot of that while people are at home trying to build that momentum, you know, toward that next week. And, you know, usually middle of the week is pretty quiet. I mean, you can even start middle of the week. But even if we went with the format that you suggest, Marcus, you know, you can start that Thursday. You know, so you already got that, you got that momentum. So that's right around the first, but using Thanksgiving as a marketing time for kicking that season off.
Yeah, yeah. So and then we got the playoff system. I'll let you take that one first. Playoffs. What do your playoffs look like?
You know, in some ways, what I was more interested in, I like the current playoff season because I thought it had a lot of energy.
Yeah.
You know, I thought the best part of the NBA game right now is I think they do a really good job with the playoffs. So I wasn't going to mess with that. I mean, really what I wanted to do was go to shorten the season. I was trying to get you in that 58. I was around 62 games, but at least shorten it, you know, by at least 20 games or so. And I actually, that was the one part of the product that I think is they've done a really good job with. So
yeah.
I didn't really look to change the playoff system too much.
Okay, okay. Phil, did you mess with the playoffs at all?
Not much. In terms of my written report, I kept it the same. If I was forced to make a change, I would send the first round back to 5 games.
Mm.
That's about it, instead of it being a 7-game series. But like Devon said, I really like the current playoff system.
I like the playoff system, too. What I don't like is that almost half the league gets into the playoffs. Like, you have more teams in the playoffs than out the playoffs. So with mine, I reduced that to about a third, again, kind of keeping with the NFL model, where about a third of the team, 12 out of 32, so a little bit more than a third of the teams in the NFL make the playoffs. So because I got a 2014 league, it had to mean that it was about 8 teams making the playoffs. So I got the 3-division winners and 1 wild card because I got the 3-division format in each conference and then 1 wild card.
Ooh, that'll make it a hustle right there, boy. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, every game, like, there'd be much more importance on every game. I mean, that would be, whew.
Yeah, and then the other 6 teams go into the lottery. And then I said no age limit on the draft. And I think that's something you said that as well, Phil.
Well, what I said, that was a part of what I said is you can go directly in from high school, but if you go to college, 3 years.
Yeah, my piece there was my other big idea was to develop the NBDL, the Developmental League. I think it's cool to bring in kids that are 18 or at least, you know, their class, high school graduation class has graduated. So you might have some 17-year-olds mixed in. But I think they're required – like I think they should be required to develop a certain amount of games or time in the minor leagues, almost like the baseball model. I think it's time for the NBA to invest more into the minor league system. You know, the CBA used to kind of be that 10 years ago before my man Isaiah Thomas got his hands on it. but, you know – I think there's a lot you can do with the NBDL. You know, I mean, think about it. You're not paying these guys a whole lot. I would even think about putting them in international competitions in terms of tournaments, leagues, teams in Europe or other parts of the world where they might play a 20 or 30 game schedule against other NBADL's teams, development league teams, but then they might play 30 or 40 games internationally as well to give teams that kind of exposure. And I think that will be a good sell because you'll still have a lot of college stars on there, on rosters. If you force kids under a certain age to play the first half of the season in an NBDL, you'll have that draw overseas. And at the end of the day, I think you're doing more for the kids in terms of their development. So if we're going to let kids in that are 18 or under – I think you owe it to them and the league because you'll have a better product, too. These kids will be playing opposed to just practicing their first year because overwhelmingly we saw that a lot of these players, take your Jermaine O'Neals, other players, it took them a few years to get to the point where they can contribute. I mean, we saw more of Jermaine O'Neals than LeBron James who came in being the man the first day.
Right, right. I like that idea, and I think also with that you could then funnel more resources into that kind of growth and development that they need as young millionaires.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you can have more if you have a place to put those guys who, you know, may not necessarily be ready for, because that's the other thing too. If we're cutting rosters, if we're cutting teams, those are roster spots. So the level of play that you got to have to get into the league is actually going to get tighter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there needs to be a place for those kids who come in and they have potential. They got talent. They need a place to go. I was thinking of something along the line of like practice squads.
Yeah.
Where you have a couple of guys who, you know, you keep on your practice squad, the developmental players and whatnot. And so then you're on the hook for half of the contract that you signed them for. You ain't got to pay, you know, if you take a high school kid, you know, in the top five, you ain't got to pay him $5 million to be on your practice squad when he ain't ready. You pay him half of that, and then, you know, he can practice, he can be on the team, and you can call him up if you need to. But he's there, he's around guys. He's kind of taking a year to really learn how to be a pro.
And that's why I said you can go directly in from high school or with your graduating class, because if you're going to go, I would say add in everything that y'all saying, but really make that decision a focused decision. That's why I said, you know, if you go to college, you go for three.
Right.
Or when the class that you graduated with reaches 3 years,
yeah,
you're eligible. But
yeah.
And that's why, so to really make young people think about that decision.
I don't mind that. I actually don't mind that at all.
Yeah, I don't mind that at all. Build the support in that needs to happen like that, whether it's a supplemental league or whether it's a, however you want to do it, build that in for those folks who make that decision.
Yeah. Now, we all have Vegas as a new spot. I think we all agree that would be a good place for the league to be in.
Yeah.
And if they go to Vegas, just automatically put the All-Star game there every year.
Yeah, I agree,
like,
man.
Like the NFL did with Honolulu, put it there every year.
I mean, and Vegas is to me, Vegas is a perfect example of an NBA town. It's a fast pace, it's urban, you know, it's flashy. That's what the league plays well in L.A. and New York. It don't do well in Green Bay. It don't do well in Milwaukee. You know, and I think the league expanded itself to too many places where it doesn't play well. There are some places like a Utah where you have the right kind of owner, the right kind of management system, where they know what kind of product to put on the court to get people to come. And it seems like Oklahoma City has figured that out and San Antonio has figured that out. So those are some smaller markets that have figured out how to put the right kind of product. And Indiana had that before the brawl. But, you know, they figured out how to put the right kind of – or Portland. They figured out how to put the right kind of product onto the field. But I also like Las Vegas because ain't nothing else going on in Nevada.
Yeah.
And you ain't got to compete with football. You ain't got to compete with none of that. You know, the college teams ain't hot. Really, it would be the only show. And that's what that would be a part of the Vegas experience. You know, come to Vegas, wild out, go catch an NBA game, wild out some more, hit a strip club, get drunk, fight Mike Tyson, and go home. That would be the Vegas experience. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And one thing I saw that y'all did that, Phil, see, you cut out the Nets. You got rid of the Nets. I'm not getting rid of them. They're going to Brooklyn.
Yeah, I call them Brooklyn. I anticipated they would go.
Yeah, that's why I kept them. It was hard to figure out who to get rid of for me. I don't know about you guys.
Well, I love when you said I felt like Kansas City or St. Louis, there needs to be a team kind of there somewhere.
Yeah.
In that area, I felt like. And you notice, because did we all cut out Atlanta?
No, I didn't cut out Atlanta. I thought about cutting them out, man. I thought about cutting them out, man. I sure did.
I'm cutting out Atlanta, Orlando. The only reason I cut out Miami because that's the NBA town. But I'm cutting.
See, I didn't cut Orlando out because they got a brand new spanking arena, and the NBA, when they got a good product, they actually come to games.
They could do WWE there.
And Orlando don't got a football team too. That was the other thing. Orlando don't got football. No football in Orlando.
I tried to pick cities that like Atlanta and Orlando and cities like that, Miami fits in that, but it's got a little asterisk next to it, is nobody really grew up there.
Yeah.
And NBA cities thrive when like that, like it's like you can feel like everybody has roots there. That's why OK City is that type of city. It feels like it's a city that people have roots. And Orlando's never felt, I don't know what it is about central to northern Florida and Atlanta, but Atlanta doesn't call it anything.
Yeah, I don't blame you for getting rid of Atlanta, man. I keep a Memphis or a Toronto, and I thought real hard about Toronto because you want to, the game has done so much to be international, and Toronto, you know, when they had teams, they showed up. They haven't had teams in a long time, so I didn't know what to do with Toronto, but I basically got rid of them.
Yeah, because their problem is they can't get the right, you know, and a lot of it's how young cats grew up. They just don't know what to do with that Canadian money.
Yeah.
Like their money being short. Brothers is brothers. At the end of the day, even though it's the most multicultural community you ever going to be in.
Right.
And they embrace multiculturalism, and it's a fantastic city with great summer stuff. It's just, you know, brothers from the city just can't say, hey. He just, you know, he can't.
I like your structure, too, because it takes away that whole Rust Belt stigma of, like, yeah, the Rust Belt teams, because they playing games in the summertime.
Yeah.
You know, where cats are like, I don't want to live in Cleveland, or I don't want to live in Detroit. Yeah. It gets too cold in Chicago. You know, it takes that out of the mix.
And those are some of the cities where the biggest events. I mean, even you talked about Milwaukee, but Milwaukee got one of the largest outdoor events happening in the summer with Summerfest. I mean, those cities come alive,
yeah,
in the summer. Big time. They become fun places to be in the summer, but they definitely not the places to be all the time in the winter. But you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you get into your condo in about September, maybe November. You know, you have to get there. Baby, just roll in.
Right. All you gotta do is get through December, January, and February, and then it starts to get a little bit better. The weather starts to get a little bit nicer. The season starts to heat up. You know.
Right. I love that. Because I said that, when Phil started talking about it, I started laughing. I'm like, I'm scrolling down, I'm like, December 1st. I was like, that's what, we're right there. Because I think that's a doable one. They got to think about that one.
Yeah.
All the things we talked about, I think that one would make the biggest difference for the league.
Yeah. I'm looking over Phil T's some more. Yeah, I think we all agree the salaries need to come down a little bit, man. I think we all kind of agreed on that.
I mean, cats are stealing money, man.
They're stealing money.
Stealing it.
And these players don't have anything to stand on. Because, like I said, everybody got their John Concat. They can talk about every fan and name their John Concat.
Yeah.
So just like no other league can they name somebody. I mean, baseball comes close, but everybody can name somebody who's highly overpaid. You have to name more people in basketball who are overpaid than who are paid fairly.
Yeah, and that's why I was really trying to like figure out a system where it's like, nah, man, cats should get paid based on what they do. Like, if you ball out in a season, then you should have the option of. I mean, and NFL players informally have this with the holdout system where they hold out until they get a new deal. You know. And I don't want to go all the way there where it's like, hey, you got cats holding out. But I do want to give some cats some structural recourse. Like, yo, man, I play way better than what you're paying me. So, the way I would have that work is after your rookie deal. So that you have to put in that first 2 to 4 years of your rookie deal. Once your rookie deal expires, you got to play out your rookie deal, whatever that is. That's paying dues and earning your keep. So you got to play out your rookie deal, whatever that is. But after that, you know, if you perform at a certain level, for example, Blake Griffin, he comes out of his rookie deal. If he's averaging 25 and 13, well, you got to pay him like he's getting 25 and 13. But the moment he stops producing that way, for example, like a Yao Ming, he racking up DMPs, then, you know, at the end of the season, you can opt out of that deal, get that money back so that team can stay competitive. You know, at the same time, you want to keep marketing, you want to keep the fans engaged. And it's, you know, if I know – you know, I'm an Orlando Magic fan. We on the hook for Gilbert Arenas for another 4 years at $18 million a year.
going up. That sucks. That does not make me want to come out to the arena.
So let me play devil's advocate for a second. Let me play devil's advocate. So
yeah.
What would keep teams away? Like, what would prevent teams from doing one or two things? So what would prevent them from, A, doing what Danny Ainge and Doc Rivers did a couple of years ago, where I don't know if it was Stephon Marbury or it was Nate Robinson, where it was like, if they played a certain amount of games, they got an extra few million.
Right.
That
you know?
Was Nate.
So,
that was Nate.
I mean, it was who?
That was Nate Robinson.
Yeah.
Yeah, I dig that. And I feel like that's why you use the metrics. That's why you use the metrics, because the metrics can be adjusted per minute, you know, per 48 minutes. Where is he at in comparison to other guys who are making what he's making? You know, win shares can still be calculated even if a guy, you know, isn't playing. If he's getting on the court with metrics, you can get some sort of a read on it. So I get that, and that would be something that you would have to think about. But in the end, I mean, again, teams can either – the player still has a right to agree. If the teams want to say, oh, well, you're not worth that, we'll renegotiate, the player can say, well, release me, and the team can release him. So if they want to play that – if the team want to play that, they can let him go. I mean, ultimately, they can let him go, and he can go see if he can get money from somebody else.
So here's my second question. What would prevent the players from being more selfish and being about, you know what, I got to get my numbers. I got to get my numbers.
And that's why I tie in the win shares, because it's not just about your numbers. Because you can be Nick Young, and you can go out there and average 20 a game and say, well, I put in 20 a game, so I should get paid like I'm like one of the top scorers in the league. Yeah, your team won 14 games. But yeah, you scored 20, but your team won 14 games. And with the amount of metrics and the way the advanced stats have gone, you can calculate that. Like, you can figure out how much a guy is actually contributing towards wins. And so that would go into it as well.
But away from that, what I also want to be able to see is the ability, like a team like OK City, to keep a young core together.
Right.
So whatever the final product is, What makes teams great and what gets people to really is building that continuity.
Right.
You want to have. I'll try to find the best of both worlds. Of, you know, you can get fair deals, fair market, but at the same time have the ability, you know, if you can, to keep teams together for 3, 4, 5 years, where you can start to build something. And that's one thing I'm, you know, whatever we come up with, I think with a final product, should allow for you to develop young teams and not lose them.
Yeah, because that's what plays in small markets, man. When you're talking about, you know, Oklahoma City or San Antonio or Utah, you're talking about teams that usually have guys. When they get guys, they keep them there for a good amount of time, and those guys become fixtures in those communities. And that plays well, and that's what keeps you, you know, New York, they want the big names. L.A., they want the big names. You know, but that's what keeps you going in those kind of communities. And that's why I kind of wanted it. That's why I kind of wanted teams, allow teams and players that flexibility. So it's like, you know, if we need to, if the Bucks want to keep Brandon Jennings, but they paying Drew Gooden $9 million a year to be hurt and sit the damn bench, then they can't then, you know, it's stupid that they can't then sign Brandon Jennings, you know, even though they could with the bird rights. So they could keep him. But then they could also get rid of Drew Gooden, bring in somebody else who actually is going to play and is actually going to help the team win some damn games, which, again, then helps you keep some of those guys around because they're like, okay, we win in here, you know. And that's the thing. You can win anywhere, I feel like, if you have that flexibility. It isn't about, well, I just got to go someplace where they're willing to pay the luxury tax, you know.
But I think I'm wondering how the NBA or any or any professional team could build into, you know, a contract, you know, some type of guarantee. And that's what, to me, guaranteed contracts always kill sports, because if that player doesn't perform up to that contract, you know, that team is stuck with that money paid out.
Right.
And what players will tell you is that, you know, if I blow my knee, you know, trying to give my all to this team, without their guaranteed contract, I'm not going to get a contract next year.
Right.
So maybe these contracts need to be set up in such a way that there is some insurance. I don't care if you go to the Lloyd's in London or wherever. If at the time of your injury you played 30 games at this level, you know, and you blow that knee and you can't play again, and you're 22 years old, you know, 24 years old, and you figure your expectancy, there should be some type of compensation for that. But this guaranteed
and,
money that they talk about.
And this will be my thing with that, Ray, is that as long as you can play, they got to pay you. If you do mess up your knee and you can't play anymore, then you shouldn't be getting paid anymore.
But there again, therein lies the problem. We talk about NBA teams having to cover those costs or those guaranteed contracts for those players that do blow a knee. Forget about it being written into that contract. Insure that player. And have him opt at a lower salary and send him on his way. And he should be happy to get that, you know, because if he was working at a steel mill and lost his knee, they're going to pay him, you know, and they're going to send it over to their insurance company, and then the insurance company's going to pay that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That steel mill is not tied to that employee.
Yeah, I feel you.
That's why I was talking about, you know, beyond the rookie deal, however you structure a rookie deal, you know, those contracts after that, you know, where you put the money in, and maybe you don't penalize teams on this, you set a range for the bonus, for the signing bonus, and then you guarantee the first couple of years. Now it's up to you as a player to manage your money. So let's say you put together there's a 4-year deal, first 2 years are guaranteed. You know, if it's LeBron James, they're going to pay him for the 4 years, right? They're going to pay him for that 4 years, but if you get hurt, that's why you got to put that money away. That's why that's kind of bonus. So if you're able to, at the point where you have leverage, if you're able to max out as much as you could on that signing bonus, then that's the money you got to put away for a rainy day. So whatever happens in year 3 and 4, you got to be ready to absorb that.
Right.
Man, they could just put us in that room, man. We had a league up and running and making money.
But, you know, another thing that we should cover at some point is how these owners and players are just robbing from these communities that have built these arenas based on the idea of revenue and the tax that they would get from these games that aren't being played. You know, these owners are declaring hardship and having these arenas built, and then they're holding out for as much money as they can possibly get. I appreciate that. But at some point, these city councils should be these city fathers should be looking at these owners going, look, you told me, you know, we'd be getting X amount of dollars. And yet every time they come up with a vote, you're holding out to, you know, make sure your wife got the new, you know, car or something. And you know, I ain't having it.
that's an excellent point, man.
You know, because in the NBA, it's as prevalent as anywhere else. These holdouts and these extended negotiations are killing some of these communities that you know levied to build these arenas. It isn't like a lot of these NBA owners own their facilities, so it's tax dollars that are being lost in a lot of these places in communities that can't afford it.
Yeah, that's the other piece is that, you know, these guys are juking these municipalities for this tax money, and then, you know, all the jobs,
you know,
all the local businesses, they ain't making no money right now. It's supposed to be open tonight. It's supposed to be rolling in that dough.
When you talk about these splits, you know, there are some owners that have more invested in that product in that city than some of these other owners. Just simply owning an NBA team brings with it a certain amount of expense. But when you have your arena subsidized, when the things that communities do for these ball teams, there are certainly some owners in better position to hold out than some of the others. If you own your facility, or if you own part interest in that facility, like Jerry Jones, go to football. You know, you don't think Jerry was worried about when that football season was going to start? You don't think that played into his, you know, his thinking as far as how long we're going to hold out?
Right.
You know, it's like, well, wait a minute. we need to get this, you know, show on the road.
Right. I got a 90-foot screen. I got to pay some damn bills.
Right.
You know how much
right.
it costs to keep that mug running?
Well, I'm gonna be hosting the biggest 2.5 men showing in history.
What'd you say? I'm gonna have a good time, man.
Listen, fellas, I'm gonna hit the road. I wish we could have got
right,
our dogs of the week, because my dog of the week was Kim Kardashian. My dog, that is a dog. That is a the holdout lasted longer than her marriage.
Oh,
he
man.
That young man.
Did
she tweet that to him, or how did he find out, you know, the papers were at the house?
Yeah, man. I think it was like tweeted or something, man. It wasn't right. Whatever happened, it wasn't right. It wasn't above board.
And I'd be going on tour with Reggie and what was the cat from Dallas?
Miles Austin.
Miles Austin? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be doing like a, you know, like
don't
Conan
trust that whole
tour. Yeah, like a Conan tour, you know, one of them book tours, and you know, like Charlie Sheen tried to do, you know, go city to city and go, look, that pussy was just not that good. I'm telling
right.
you, you know.
Go out there like Chris
here.
You know, I just made some mistakes, man. You know, got caught up in the whole situation, lifestyle,
right.
and. You know, it wasn't worth it.
That's true basketball-wise.
Yeah.
She's going to have her own basketball-wise.
Yeah, man.
You know?
Yeah, that's hustling right there, man. In one sense, I can't stand her. In another sense, I ain't mad at her. You're going to find some sucker that's going to roll with you. You do what you got to do. But,
just raised his profile for the rest of his life.
That's true.
Or, you know, if he can't figure out how to keep that at home, and you know, all the money she had and all the, you know, if he can't figure out a way to keep that, they might have ruined his ass for life. Kardashians might have fucked him up forever. You know, because he can't play basketball forever, but he could just nod his head like a husband
right.
should. For the rest of his life, you know.
Right.
You want some new shoes? Yeah, I take some new shoes. You know, but he should have just been nodding his head. He couldn't figure it out. He couldn't figure it out. Immaturity.
Hey, that's what Lamar angling for. That's what Odom gonna hang around.
He tried to tell him. Odom was over like, "Are you crazy?
Right.
Right. Right.
You know how much money she got? She got more money than you.
Yeah.
It is not finite."
They're like, why can't you be like Lamar? And Lamar, like, I'm just going to eat this candy and shut up.
Right. Where's my Twizzlers at? Hey, my dog of the week was in Dominican. And Dominican said, Goodell, I want to talk to you. I like that about Dominican, man. I like that young guy, man. He's like, nah, you keep taking my money. We're going to have to talk about this, right? You keep reaching in my pocket like this. We're going to have a conversation. That's the way it should be. Man, reaching into your pocket, taking
right.
$50,000, $60,000, you might want to sit down with that dude and talk to him for a minute and figure out what the hell is going on.
And mine was going to be Kim, but I was going to say the entire Lions, because the way they mock my boy, they just beat him down. And like I told y'all, Elway's plan is, He gonna play him until the fans start saying, just stop it. Don't put him in no more.
Get his ass out of there.
I told Chuck. You know they want to say it, but he gonna keep feeding them more and more until they say uncle.
Right.
It's gonna keep being like this, man. It's gonna and I saw the plan. I saw the blueprint. They gonna keep. He said they saying all the right things, but we think we're gonna stick with him. We're gonna keep him out there. We hope he learns more this week. They go keep killing them Denver fans. After this is over, they'll never second guess that way again.
Be careful what you wish for. Oh, man. Well, yeah, fellas, I'm going to let y'all run. I got to run too, man. Good show. I'm going to get these proposals up, man. You got some good stuff, man. Everybody did a good job. I like that. That's a nice little nice little segment, ready to, you know, commiserate around the lack of a season. You know, I can't even, like, get ready for a fantasy basketball draft or nothing, man. Y'all understand, this is hurting me, man. This is hurting me.
I mean, we might even want to spend another 5 or 10 minutes on next week, man. I got some texts when we were going off the air of people that were like, man, I wanted to hear more about this. So.
Yeah.
We probably should go back and do a second half and spend more time on these because I want to get my stuff together and get it over to y'all. So, I mean,
okay.
I'm going to be interested in doing it. Actually, I'll be back by then, I think. I'm going to be traveling.
Okay.
So I'll let y'all know if I want to make it back by then.
All right. Cool. Well, all right, fellas. Y'all take it easy, man.
All right.
Peace.